Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. It is the 13th day of November 2014. It is, coincidentally, the first really righteously, properly freezing day here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go if you want to jump into the rousing, raucous, rollicking good time that is the chat room. We've got a nice crowd already forming in there this evening, this here Thorn in the Side Thursday, if you will. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker, News Ninja. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Kennergenics. Good evening, Lance Rocks. Good evening, Sergi. Good evening, Texas T. And, of course, good evening to our two longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. We begin the evening, as we always do, you know, noting all the necessaries for full and meaningful participation herein. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the players, the media players. You will find access to the archives, podcasts, podcast feed, what have you. And you will, of course, find the ever-present, ubiquitous Horn PayPal interface. You know, I hate doing this every evening. It just sucks. But it's the only way we keep... This is a 10-year-old operation. We've been at this for 10 years now. This is a conversation that's been going on for 10 blessed years. Kind of like a poker game where people sit down, people get up, people sit back, whatever. But the game itself never stops. That's what we've been doing here for 10 years. And the only way we keep it going is with your kind contributions. So, this evening, no challenge on the table. There is no matching anything. It's just Thursday, and we're trying to raise $150. $150 is what we try to raise every evening to keep things going here. And, you know, all the combinations and permutations, one at 150, two at 75, three at 50, six at 25, 30 at 5, you 5 at 30, you know. But the key to it all is that it all either has to come through the PayPal interface or through the U.S. Postal Service, if you prefer to participate by the U.S. Postal Service. Well, that's easy, too. The address is The Horn, H-O-R-N, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And, of course, we always include the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid never sees these things. And, in fact, they go straight to the Horn account, whereafter we pay bills. And bills, indeed, we have. So, there you have it. One way or the other is fine, and you know, if you participate through the mails, by all means, let me know so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into what is ordinarily an echo chamber, i.e., the Horn mailbox. Wow, that's cool. Carol Baker just sent me a message. She says we can't not have a premium on the table. How about another Ozark gift basket filled with all the seasonal best from Hooterville Holler? $75. All right, so it's there. Half of the evening's fundraising goal gets you an official gathered together by none other than Carol Baker herself, Hooterville Holler gift basket. And there's yummy stuff in there, I can guarantee it. Because I have personally taste-tested the goods from Hooterville. So it's there for anybody who wants to pony up $75. You get a personal gift basket direct from Carol Baker. All right, then. Where do we start this evening? Well, all right, there's big stuff out there. There's big news on the table. Oh, yes, there is. Yes, there is. But I want to answer or want to share a little bit of mail with you because we get such good mail around here. Overnight, we got a note from Scott in Sweden. Hey, Bobbery Bob. Hey, Scott. Yes. Subject line of this note, by the way, based on our conversation last night. How many internet providers? Hey, Bobbery Bob. Yes, it's as bad as you thought. I did a quick check, and in Sweden, I can choose from at least 9 different internet providers, each with several different plans, and might be able to find more if I look harder. I could even have a fiber optic cable pulled up to the house out here in the country, as there's a hub a couple of 100 meters away down by the township road. But as the current provider lets me download stuff as fast as I ever really need it, why bother? By the way, not to rub it in much, but doctors here use that bare internet to send encrypted MRIs and CTs and US, etc. imagery to each other. Yeah, I know. As to yoga as religious hokey pokey, I was told by an Uzbeki atheist that I ought to learn the Muslim Salat positions, as they would be very good for my stiff back. This was not meant to mock, because, see, you could take it that way. It would do you good to learn the Muslim Salat positions, as they will, bowing down to God Almighty will be good for your stiff back, you heathen infidel unbeliever, you. Now, I got that on the first read. This was not meant to mock, but to honor its practicality. It made me wonder what, if any, connections there are between yoga and the Salat postures. Well, kind of the same, you know, a couple of thousand miles, or just kind of the same general neck of the woods. And, of course, Hinduism was much older than Islam, so, who knows, you take one from column B, two from column C, right. Finally, as to the Church of God stuff, I don't know how much more of Wednesday I can stand. You! I walk around in these swamps. But at least last night there was a really happening house band. The stupidity, Scott continues, is just too sad and depressing. However, when you got to the kimchi portion of the program, and who knew we'd wind up with a kimchi portion of the program, these things just happen. I sat up with a hallelujah. My daughter turned me on to that in Seoul. And ever since, when she comes home for a while, she brings some and we'll fire up the grill and put on some, oh, dear God. Samgyeopsal, which sound, I don't know if that's Swedish or Korean. And savor the kimchi. I've never gotten her to honor her Scottish or German heritage, Scott says, with haggis or sauerkraut, respectively. But then I'm still more than a little bit iffy on the surströmming. Oh, we know about being iffy on the surströmming. Yeah, we just about had angry crowds with pitchforks and torches when we opened ours outside. That was a long-ago care package. And, it wasn't awful. It wasn't awful. It was awful pickled fish. But it wasn't awful for awful pickled fish. You just kind of needed to be wearing one of those Homer Simpson nuclear waste suits and have the 30-foot tongs when you, but apart from that, it was yummy and the bread was good. Oh, yes. But if she's doing the kimchi now, Scott, well, sauerkraut's going to be a little bit of a letdown, don't you think, buddy? Maybe you'll have a little more luck, though. I don't know. So, like I said, we get awesome, awesome mail here. And it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, we generally reserve Thorn in the Side Thursday for things that just generally make us as progressive people go, don't! Yeah. And we've got some of those. I promise we really, really do. But my inclination here at 11 minutes past the hour is to note a really, really, really big deal here in almost level west by Cole, Virginia. The news broke earlier today. Let's see, when did I first see it in my email box? About 4:30. And in fact, our buddy Mark was the first one to send me notice of it. The headline at the Charleston Gazette says merely, by Ken Ward Jr., by the way, and what do we have to do to get this guy a Pulitzer? I mean, 20-plus years on the job covering the excesses and brutalities of the coal industry and doing it better than anybody else in the country? Come on. But anyway, the headline to Ken Ward Jr.'s story this afternoon, longtime Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship indicted. Yeah, indicted. You may recall, good God, if you listen to this program, how can you not know who Don Blankenship is? He's a sociopath. His eyes are stone dead. He has no soul whatsoever. And he is, arguably, the man singly most responsible for the incineration of 29 human beings in the Upper Big Branch mine in April 2010. It's hard to believe that it's, well, come April, it'll be 5 years that the universe has trundled on without those 29 men sharing life with their 29 families. Massey Energy, who owned Upper Big Branch, was run by Don Blankenship, and Don Blankenship had a history of driving the people who worked for that company as if they were something less than human. He notoriously sent out memos saying, if you're working on safety stuff or maintenance stuff and you ain't moving coal, you ain't working. Work like you mean it. Before he ever played a monumental role in the incineration of 29 human beings at Upper Big Branch, he had killed a couple of folks at the Aracoma mines because of the brutal way in which he insisted that that safety really didn't matter. Now, bear in mind, Massey did a ton of mountaintop removal, and successor Alpha Natural Resources still does a ton of it. These were underground mines. This was old school, well, mechanized variety mining. And the ball of fire that ripped through the Upper Big Branch complex was so fast and so hot that it incinerated the 29 men in that mine at that time so thoroughly that they could not be recognized as former, their corpses could not be recognized as former members of the human species. The rescue crews that frantically dug through the rubble walked past the incinerated remains, never realizing that the people they were looking for had been reduced to lumps of carbon. That's how bad it was. Now, down in Whitesville, West Virginia, there's a big, long, well, for Whitesville, granite wall inscribed with the names of the miners, and on the back, the history of the coal industry. And for such a dark and dirty substance, the history on the back of that monument is a stunning job of whitewashing. Tom Sawyer's rubes could not have whitewashed better. But anyway, back to Don Blankenship. One, my email box just exploded with, "Hooray! Don Blankenship's been indicted! Yee-haw! Hot diggity! Justice!" I take a more sober sides approach. Because this is, after all, Merca. And we don't cotton to our millionaires going to no prison. It's a four-count job, but it's one indictment. Was announced this afternoon. U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, Booth Goodwin, issued a prepared statement. And there has been no perp walk. One wonders if there will be a perp walk. If there was any justice, there would be an orange jumpsuit and some orange plastic shower shoes in Don's immediate future as he awaited a bail that would be set at somewhere around, $100 million or so. I mean, the man has already absented himself from the state of West Virginia, which was his long, long, long time home. I mean, he was born here, or maybe just across the river in Kentucky. At one point in time, there was news of him running around down around Johnson City, Tennessee somewhere. Sorry, Tennessee. Your loss, our gain. Trying to set up another bloodthirsty coal operation. So that means he moves around the country pretty easily. He's been photographed in far-flung countries from China to the French Riviera, so that means that, well, passport surrender probably is in order. The Constitution forbids excessive bail. And this charge is not a charge of murder. That's kind of a pity. Generally speaking, murder is the only crime for which bail is not deemed mandatory. Twenty-nine families, or maybe even 58 families. Who knows? 116 families. Nah, who are we kidding? An entire region of a state of this union ripped asunder by what happened in April 2010. No word in the story yet on what bail is, or whether he will surrender himself, or whether, come on, there's not going to be a perp walk. Sad. So some U.S. magistrate will set bail for Don Blankenship. And, if it's $1 million, it'll be chump change for him. Because the man has grown obscenely wealthy off of the sacrifice and the blood and the toil and the tears and the sweat of the people who worked for him. And as we remember the 29 people whose death he is charged with at least indirectly participating in, let us remember also that uncharged, there are 4,000 statistical excess deaths in West Virginia mountaintop removal counties every year. And Don Blankenship has ownership of some percentage of those as well. So, yeah, like I said, it's a 4-count indictment. It alleges conspiracy. If you wish to read the indictment, you can go to justice.gov, and the link is inside the press release. The press release is titled, Former Massey Energy CEO Indicted. The indictment alleges that during the same period of time, January 2008 through about April 2010, Blankenship was part of a conspiracy to impede and hinder federal mine safety officials from carrying out their duties at Upper Big Branch by providing advance warning of federal mine safety inspection activities so their underground operations could conceal and cover up safety violations that they routinely committed. Do you remember, if you were listening last night, when I talked about growing up in what was, it was Bill and I talking, Mr. Stress, and I mentioned, told a little bit about growing up in what was called a dry county. And along the way, I mentioned the fact that our phone number at my home was a digit or so different from that of one of the larger and more enterprising bootleggers in the county. And that every so often we would pick up the phone, hello? And a voice, an unidentified voice at the other end of the line, and of course this is a million years before call waiting or caller ID, an unidentified voice at the other end said, tell him the sheriff's office on the way. Click. Well, in essence, Don Blankenship is being charged with behaving like whoever that was in the sheriff's office that was calling our house thinking he was calling the bootleggers. He conspired to impede and hinder federal mine safety officials from carrying out their duties by providing advance warning of federal mine safety inspection activities so their underground operations could conceal and cover up safety violations that they routinely committed. Working underground for Massey Energy was a daily descent into hell in which a miner, non-union, because Don had spent his entire career busting the UMWA, the United Mine Workers of America, and man, they took to their busting like a duck to water. These non-union coal miners who were paid well. I mean, they were paid as well or better than a union coal miner, but the trade-off was that they had to do what they were told. They had to work where they were told to work in conditions that no union miner would likely have to work in. And if they complained, the boss would just say, well, that's fine. I don't want you to work where you think you ain't safe. Get on out of here. Don't come back. Don't plan on ever mining coal anywhere around here, because we're going to let everybody know that you're one of them lily-livered safety sissies. See, blacklisting is also supposed to be illegal, but you can find plenty of miners who will tell you that it's a reality to this day. The indictment further alleges that after a major fatal explosion occurred at Upper Big Branch on April 5, 2010, after Blankenship made and caused to be made false statements and representations to the Securities and Exchange Commission concerning Massey Energy's safety practices prior to the explosion. Additionally, the indictment alleges that after this explosion, Blankenship made and caused to be made materially false statements and representations, as well as materially misleading omissions in connection with the purchase and sale of Massey Energy stock. Does this call anybody to mind for you? I mean, because we're all history nerds here, right? Does this remind you of anything? Al Capone had killed how many people? But he never got popped for a single murder. He got taken down by the Treasury Department for cheating on his taxes. Well, we've gone from bootleggers to Al Capone. And we're still talking about the same individual. Huh! How about that? So no, there's no premeditated murder charge here. There is no heat of passion murder charge here. There is no voluntary manslaughter charge. No involuntary manslaughter charge. There is absolutely no charge whatsoever that relates to the deaths of 29 men who, prior to that sad, sad day in April 2010, weren't known as victims, weren't known as human beings who had been incinerated past recognition as members of the human species, but were known instead as Papa, Grandpa, Bubby, Cousin, Uncle, Husband. Prior to April 5th, 2010, well, April in this neck of the woods, you're thinking about, you know, if you're really, you know, getting your hillbilly on, you're thinking about ramps. That first green, oh hell, this is our first really cold day, and I'm thinking about ramps, because it's that first green thing that pokes its head up through the snow on the Appalachian mountainsides. And it's potent and it's strong, and it reminds you of the fortitude it took to get through the winter and see spring come. That first green thing, those ramps, that delight, that tonic. You're thinking a little while later, it'll be time for the Molly Moochers to come up. Morels, wild mushrooms, beloved in the region. You're thinking about spring gobbler season. And that one you've been hearing up on the hillside, calling, and wondering what kind of shape your hen calls in. And maybe it's time to get down the 12-gauge and clean it out and make sure all your camouflage gear is properly scentless. And how maybe you and the boy will go up on the hill and sit and wait and see if you can bring home a tom. Thinking maybe about doing your spring maintenance on the four-wheeler. It's probably had a good workout during the previous winter. Thinking about Easter. thinking about getting Easter clothes for the little ones, Easter baskets, that big old Easter dinner and that big old ham. These were the things that 29 men were thinking about on April 4th, 2010. And simply because Don Blankenship has not yet figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses, his in particular. Maybe he's such a sociopath he doesn't even understand that he is mortal. Maybe he thinks he can buy his way out of death. I mean, this is a man who is not particularly mentally well. He has a history, for instance, of having thrown a fit on his maid because she brought him back the wrong order from McDonald's, and he took the McDonald's order and threw it at her. This is our 1% class. He rose through brutality and determination from being a poor kid from Mingo County, West Virginia, to being a multimillionaire. Along the way, he studied strike-breaking tactics from anti-apartheid knee breakers in South Africa. He sat and determinedly waited out the Union until he had broken it into a million tiny pieces. And once he'd broken the Union, he moved on into the wonderful world of strip mining and mountaintop removal so that he wouldn't even have to employ that many underground miners in the first place. Underground coal mining employment in West Virginia plummeted from six figures around 1980 to the less than 14,000 today, and of that, a vast, vast, vast amount of the coal has moved out of this region by around 4,000 people working 10 or 15 to a crew, taking down thousands of acres with nothing but heavy machinery and ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives, and poisoning God knows how many innocent people around them in the process. A couple of observations about the U.S. attorney who has sought and secured this indictment. Booth Goodwin comes from a very, very well-connected West Virginia political family. He was appointed U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia by Barack Hussein Obama, that one in our White House, as they like to say around here. And if he succeeds in this prosecution, which if all four counts were convictions and all four counts were ordered by the judge hearing the case to be served consecutively and not concurrently, Don Blankenship would be in prison for 31 years. If Booth Goodwin secures the conviction, Booth Goodwin can have any political office which he may want in this state. Governor, senator, member of Congress, Supreme Court of this state. Maybe he'd like to have a federal judgeship. Well, if there's a Republican president, he won't get that in 2016. He'll be out on his ear as of January 2017 with the arrival of a new president, unless it's a Democrat who reappoints him. But he can have anything he wants in this state if he just gets a conviction on Don Blankenship and someone, gets justice. First and foremost, the 29 families. The 58 families. The 116 families. The entire region. That is not to say that this state is united against Don Blankenship. It is not. I went and checked the... remember me telling you yesterday about Hoppy Kercheval? Really, Hoppy. Well, I checked out the news story from West Virginia Metro News, which is that right-wing operation out of Morgantown. And I didn't have to go very far at all before I found the relevant comment for which I sought. Let's see, here it is. Well. No. Wait. Oh, man, we've had a lot of comments since. Oh, there it is. The comments here are proof he could not get a fair trial in West Virginia. The left-wing media long ago accused him, tried him, and condemned him. He offended them when he took on the corrupt anti-business Democrat machine and the unions like no one else had dared to do in 80 years. To which one individual at least replied, blah, 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 liberal media, blah, Obama, blah, blah, liberals, blah, blah, Democrats, blah, left-wing media, blah, blah, war on coal, blah, 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 anti-business Democrat, blah, blah, Obama, blah, blah. But there are people who think that he is just another poor put-upon victim of Obama's war on coal. No, really. Is seeking justice for 29 incinerated human beings a part of the war on coal? I goddamn well want to know. I want to know that direct from the Republican Party. I want to know it from the boys like Bill Rainey over to the Friends of Coal and the West Virginia Coal Association. Is this here part of Obama's war on coal? Is it? Might be kind of fun to find out. Because see, anytime you so much as, if you bow your head to pray over Sunday dinner and you don't thank the coal industry, well, you're part of Obama's war on coal. There's war on coal all over the place. But here's a little fun something or another for anybody who wants to do any research. Because I know there are people who are much better at this than I am. You know those websites where you can find all the campaign contributions? Wouldn't it be kind of fun to go and look at the campaign finance disclosures and find out, let's say, how many thousands and thousands of dollars soon-to-be brand-new Senate Majority Leader Mitch Addison McConnell has received from Don Blankenship? Because I'll bet you there's plenty. How about John Boehner? Reckon he's ever took a nickel from Don Blankenship? Because Don Blankenship, I mean, he threw his nickels around politically like paper airplanes. And they weren't nickels neither. He tried to buy an entire state government here. He bought himself the Supreme Court of this state. Wonder if the for-profit media would actually run a story. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell financially connected to indicted Upper Big Branch disaster mastermind Don Blankenship. I somehow. That wouldn't be sporting, though, would it? That wouldn't be according to the Marcus of Queensbury rules. I mean, Democrats and liberal media wouldn't ever want to do anything like that because, well, I mean, that's just the politics of personal destruction. And I mean, that's the kind of thing the Koch brothers do, but we're above all that. We fight fair. You can, Carol Baker? Carol in the chat room. I can find those for you, Bob. Oh, do let's get, if you can, Carol, let's get a scoop out there on the Washington Post and the New York Times. Let's beat them to the punch. Because, I mean, I ain't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, and I'm brokered in the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey. But I'll bet you with my last dollar that there's plenty of campaign money went to folks like Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. How about incoming West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito? I might remind people that I was the little mastermind behind having folks go and check and see if maybe she'd ever taken a nickel from Freedom Industries back when they poisoned 300,000 people last January. How about Republican House power broker Hal Rogers of Kentucky's 5th District? How about a dashing young man named Evan Jenkins, who's going to be the brand new West Virginia 3rd District congressman? That's my district, who just unseated Nick Rahal. Now, he's been running around political circles for a while. I'll bet you he's taken some Don Blankenship money. And all of these people are part of that brand new Republican majority that's going to clean up government. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. They going to clean up on government. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a hint, Carol. Go back a few years and look up an organization called And For the Sake of the Children. That was the front group that Don Blankenship created to try to buy a government with his filthy coal money. But Don made plenty of contributions in his own name and was damn proud of them. He's had a famous feud going on with Joe Manchin, but I'll bet you there's some Don Blankenship money in Joe Manchin's past. I'll bet you there's some Don Blankenship money in the governor of West Virginia, Earl Ray Tomlin's past. Because at one point in time, Don was pretty equal opportunity. He was just buying him a government. Yeah. But like I said at the beginning of all this, I'm taking this rather soberly. I got some emails saying, "Hoo-wee, Don Blankenship's been indicted." Mm-mm, no, no, no. It's not time to pop the champagne. It ain't time to even set it outside so's it can get cold. Among other things, it will be interesting after we don't see Don do the perp walk, after he doesn't have a bond set at $100 million. How about $29 million? How about $1 million for every incinerated human being? Nope, not that either. So after we've seen him not do the perp walk, after we've not seen him face $100 million in bond or even $29 million, maybe a million tops, probably more like $25,000, I wouldn't be surprised to see Don Blankenship have a bond set at a rate lower than we set. Well, we have had peaceful protesters in this state be subjected to bonds in six figures. What do you want to bet Don Blankenship's bond is less than the bond that was set for a person who sat in a tree at one of his mines. Want to bet? The man's going to have to be tried, and it will be interesting to find out just which sleazy pettifogging lawyer he retains to do that bit of dirty business. It won't be one lawyer. It'll be a whole team. And they will charge a lovely penny. Now, I know. Oh, boy. I know if I was Don Blankenship in this circumstance, I know exactly who I'd hire, and I know who would take it. And I actually respect the man because he's one of the finest criminal lawyers in West Virginia. But I doubt if he would take the case. I mean, I've known him to represent... I've known him to represent accused child rapists. But Don Blankenship might be a bridge too far. So we are far from even chilling. Hell, we're far from chilling. We're far from even going out and buying champagne. Stick with beer for the time being. And to the extent they were drinking men at all, I'll warrant the fellas that got incinerated at Upper Big Branch were beer drinkers, if anything else. So if anything, just hoist a glass of Keystone Light or Old Milwaukee or Natural Light or something like that. Hoist a glass of that to them, because they were working men. And they lived like working men. And all too unfortunately, they died like working men. I got a lot of issues with the coal industry. I got a lot of issues with coal miners. But I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. And I won't go where the right wing does. I've been involved in the struggle against mountaintop removal in some form or another for more than 10 years now. And I've seen friends and colleagues attacked. My own beloved wife was battered at a rally. I've been threatened. Vehicles been sabotaged. Friends have been run off the road and threatened to be burnt out of their homes for simply saying that mountaintop removal is an inhuman barbarity that ought not be practiced on any human community. I won't go where they've gone. I won't even... agnostic that I am, or whatever it is, I won't dirty up my soul the way they dirty up theirs. There's no getting around to the fact, that people who work in the coal industry are working against the better interests of humanity every day. And there's no getting around that they are only following orders, and there's no getting around that they are just trying to feed their families. But there is no human being doing a job whose job should leave them incinerated past recognition as a former working, loving, breathing member of the human species. And see, Don Blankenship, within the sort of universal platonic ideal of justice, must be punished. None of the crimes with which he is charged carry the death penalty, so we need not worry our moralizing little heads about that. Don Blankenship will never be incinerated in a hellish blast of ignited gas. He will never be reduced, except through perhaps the action of the eons, past recognition as a member of the human species. Millions of years can go by, and we can find a chip of bone in the dirt and pretty much reconstruct an entire 80-foot damn dinosaur from it. There wasn't much to reconstruct out of the 29 men who were incinerated at Upper Big Branch because Don Blankenship wanted more money. A dinosaur gone hundreds of millions of years has a better chance of being remembered than they do. Don Blankenship, it is my considered opinion, although I am no expert, is a sociopath. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as I would suspect that if you sat him down and ran him through the various axes of the Statistical and Diagnostic Manual, fourth edition, that he would come back, "Oh, Jesus, get the big net. Screw that, get the cattle prods, the tasers, and the pepper spray, and put him somewhere where he can't hurt himself or others." Don Blankenship has to be punished because Don Blankenship never punishes himself. Don Blankenship thinks he did nothing wrong. Don Blankenship puts on flag-colored shirts and stands on blasted mountaintop removal moonscapes and declares himself a patriot. You know, just like the Minutemen who rushed out at Lexington and Concord to hold back the British. If there is to be anything resembling justice in the United States of America, Don Blankenship must be convicted, and Don Blankenship must be punished within the fullest, to the fullest extent contemplable by the law. So that's that. Other stuff to go into this evening, some stuff that we didn't even get to last night. And some of which sort of touches on this topic as well. So that's all kind of in the offing. Of course, the heart and soul of this program is what we call conversation radio. That involves you calling the program at either 304-663-4676 or 304-574-8178. Or on Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact. So if you've never done it before, send me a contact request, and we'll be chatting right away. A couple of emails, one coming from Diane in Kansas, Stan, exercising her marvelous coherence. "My undergraduates in the middle of Kansas who did a two-hour presentation on the Upper Big Branch mining disaster have serious issues with this company and its CEO, too. They took no prisoners and had recommendations for the government agency, too." Signed, Diane in Kansas, Stan, where we had a 4.8 earthquake yesterday in South Kansas, near Oklahoma. Hi, frackers! Yeah. I would be fascinated to know, Diane, what their attitudes were. I'm sure they were well taught. Ron and Raleigh. You want to bet, Bob, that sometime around 5 years from now, when all appeals are exhausted, Don Blankenship will walk out of a courtroom a free man? That is a very cynical position, but it is also one that is supported by history. I could tell you the story of Sid Hatfield. Sid Hatfield was implicated in what was called the Matewan Massacre. The mayor of the little town of Matewan, where it took place, where gun thugs took on Baldwin Felt's detectives, gun thugs for the coal company, took on enraged miners, sick to death of having their human rights and their human dignity utterly degraded. Some gun thugs were killed, including one of the Felt's boys, one or two of the Felt's boys themselves. John Sayles made a magnificent movie about the Matewan incident. It's called Matewan, M-A-T-W-A-N, 1986. It remains a brilliant film. Sid Hatfield was involved with that. The mayor of the town, Cabell Testerman, was killed in the shootout. There were actually more, I think there were more people killed at Matewan than there were at the OK Corral, but everybody knows about the OK Corral. And Sid Hatfield took up with Mayor Testerman's widow. The Baldwin Felt's detective agency did everything in their power to smear him for that. But then they got to some county government. You know, this was 1920, and even then the lesson was plain that it was far easier to buy local and state governments than it is to buy the federal government. We see that in action with the right wing and the Koch brothers today. And so they got Sid Hatfield indicted in McDowell County, West Virginia. And as he walked up the steps to the McDowell County Courthouse, he was gunned down in cold blood in broad daylight. Some fellows were indicted for it, but that was rigged, and only a few years ago did the long-hidden-away court records become discovered from where they had been purloined. So, Ron, I won't take your bet. That is a distinct possibility. That's why I say it ain't even time to buy champagne, let alone chill it. Thanks going out to Robert. Thank you very kindly, Robert. Robert has gotten us started on fundraising for this evening. Before we have gotten to the end of the first hour of the program, we now have $130 to go to get us to the end of the evening's fundraising goal. And remember, $75 gets you a hand-packed, personally selected Hooterville Holler gift basket courtesy of Carol Baker. Pretty nice. Pretty nice, I'd say. It's Thursday, and I've been checking the email here, looking to see if we had, because you know how I feel about the Green News Report. Nothing in yet. But light up the phones. We don't have to talk necessarily about this. Maybe I've talked about all it needs talking about. But if you want to, we can. Anything else is also fair game. This is not one of those ego-driven programs where you have to talk about what I want to talk about or we don't talk at all. We can go all over the place. We may wind up talking about kimchi again for all I know. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Almost level with West Virginia, Flatten Mountains, gold built in our river. Life is cheap there, cheaper by the ton. We lose more by law here than if they use a gun. Strip mine roads, ruin my home, all the places I belong. My memory died within her. Massey's run off, poison in the water. Black and filthy, mercury in the sky. Poison taste of arsenic, fly ash in my eye. Strip mine roads, ruin my home. All the places I've been. Stripped off mama, where's my home, my country road? I hear Massey's voice every hour, it warns me on the radio that I should go far away. Driving down the road, I get a feeling that I gotta stay, fight for better days, better days. On these roads I fight for home, all the hills where I belong. West Virginia, I fight for mama, this is my home, down country road.
No, how you doing, Mr. Blankenship? ABC News.
Hey, almost level. West Virginia, Donnie Blankenship, buying him a government. 1.7 million dirty bucks to take away our justice, haul it off in his coal truck. On these roads I'll fight for home and the hills where I belong.
Yeah, that is a reboot, if you will. That's a reboot of Take Me Home, Country Roads. Lyrics by Bob Kincaid. Yeah, okay. I can do a little bit of shameless self-promotion sometime. I haven't played that in a very long time, so it seemed appropriate. Note coming in from a dear, dear friend from long time past, noting now, Don Blankenship, now, if we could just get the universe to drop a house on Bob Murray. Exactly. The word that comes to mind when I think of Bob Murray and Don Blankenship is cellmate. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Ed. I just wanted to tell you, listening to you last night, and you made me so hungry. My sister-in-law is Korean.
Oh, my.
And I love kimchi, and I love bulgogi. Ooh, help me, Jesus.
Yes, indeedy.
Well, I won't keep you. I just want to let you know that you just about killed me. I almost chewed the leg on the dining room table.
Well, if they were kimchi flavored, I wouldn't be the least surprised, Edward. I mean,
you're telling me.
But you know, one of the things that I found out is that kimchi is seasonal. Did you know that?
No.
Ask your sister-in-law. We were taught by our Korean neighbor that there's spring kimchi and summer kimchi and fall kimchi and winter kimchi, and they're all different.
Well, I'll be. I didn't know that.
You might make the inquiry, because it, It'll open up a whole new universe of kimchi for you.
Well, I had a dear friend at the University of Oklahoma, a Japanese fella, Yukio, and he taught me to do some Japanese cooking, which I enjoy very much.
I got a real, I could go crazy in a Japanese restaurant. I love sushi, and I love the cooked stuff, too.
Yeah, I like the stuff that is real hot, and you dip it in beaten egg, and the egg cooks on it. I don't know what it's called, but it's good.
Yes, it is, and I don't know what it's called either, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Just to give you an idea of West Virginia, Appalachia, entering the 21st century, I only have to drive 20 miles now to get Japanese food. There's actually a Japanese restaurant in a little shopping center in Somersville, West Virginia, which just shocked me. Well, I guess it's probably because of the tourist economy. You got a lot of people coming down I-79 from Ontario, and, you know, they want to eat something besides McDonald's, and there's enough there to support it. And so it's just the other day. Agnes Ferg and I ate lunch for $15 in this place, and we walked out stuffed.
Well, I tell you one thing, you won't get it for $15 in Dallas.
Ain't nothing $15 in Dallas.
You're telling me. Oh, well. Well, anyway, I'll let you go. I just want to tell you that I love kimchi, and I love bulgogi. Oh, my. I can do the bulgogi. But I can't do the kimchi. I don't know. It doesn't work for me.
Well, Edward, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Well, you do too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our dear friend, Edward, calling from Dallas. The gizmo line is open, 304-663-4676. 4676 spells horn, H-O-R-N. And, of course, 304-574-8178. We'll keep things rolling here. Let's see. Yep. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
What's happening, Bill?
Well, I want you to come on. Who was handling the vocal on that?
Hey, I'm not at liberty to say. That was, that's really a story. I wrote that lyric and handed it off, and a group of, to this day, anonymous musical luminaries from the region all wanted to participate in the production of it.
Well, she reached out and grabbed me by the throat.
Oh, she can, she can sing a tune.
Yeah, that's the feel. That's the one thing you can't buy, you can't teach. I taught some harmonica stuff at night school in Cleveland Heights here many moons ago. And I said to them, you know, all I can get you to do is listen to this stuff and show you how it's done, because you're playing the damn thing backwards, whether anybody knows it or not. You're working on a fifth. Well, which I did that too plenty of times. Worked on a fifth.
I was going to say, I've never been too terribly musically inclined, but I've worked on a bunch of fifths.
Yeah, it's a cycle. If the band's playing E, I'm using an A harmonica, is what it amounts to.
Wow.
It's called cross keying. Or you can go one step down too, in that third position, as we call it. And when you play the so called cross harp or second position, you have the ability to bend certain, because the old harps, there's some new ones around, but the old style harmonica, which was the way the Germans tuned it, was strange, and it worked out that way. And how these guys 100 years ago ever figured out that you could play a harmonic, you know, you could play a fifth, and you get 2 to 3 chords out of the three. You could bend a note. If you hit that thing hard and you bring the breath in as hard as you can, that brass reed in there bends and it knocks down a half a step. And there's the secret right there. And then another thing is split tuning is another thing. I taught the damn stuff for a while, but I guess in many ways I was teaching that guys would come up to me and when they were young and they're established players, and I said, Bill, I used to come to hear you constantly. So I guess that was my job is, because my one buddy is always ragging me, why didn't you become a history teacher, you lazy? And he's right. I was too lazy to go to school, Bob. I mean, all I wanted to do was get the hell out of the school I was in and get a job and move out of this housing project because I was sick and tired of the constant, I mean, you talk about brawling and fighting. Oh, yeah. And by the way, in case anybody's thinking right away, it was not ethnicity. It was not a black and white battle. It was a battle white against white. It was just, it was that 50s thing that you had to really read about to understand. You know, the knife I always carried, where you shook your wrist and the blade popped up. And it wasn't even a push button. It was a gravity thing. And weaponry like that and a bad disposition was how you survived in the conditions of the... And the project that I was in was opened up right in 39 by the person that cut the ribbon was Eleanor Roosevelt. Because the diffraction had really... It was the first... It got the name of urban renewal over the years. And, of course, it became kind of a joke. But the first two or three places were... That was Depression stuff talking. That was Depression hero talking. So, as I say, that's why I never had a problem justifying being a Caucasian blues musician. I said, well, my neighbors were playing that stuff on the radio to the point where it was just outright driving me crazy. It was so damn good, you know? Anyway, I let you go, but I was just wondering because she hit it, man. She's
good, believe me.
Man, you could check the emotion was there. It was, because I never cared much for the commercial version of that song.
Well, I mean, it's beloved in this state because there aren't just a lot of songs that mention West Virginia, one.
Oh, no.
And it paints a positive picture of us instead of, you know, the sort of grim, dark, minor chord kind of thing. But when you get right down to it, the history of that, the original song, it was written by some out-of-state hippies who had, and I don't use the word hippie pejoratively.
No, that's what you mean.
They just were. And it was written by some out-of-state hippies who had taken up to, decided to set up camp in West Virginia back in the day. And what they knew about West Virginia geography, you could apparently put in a coffee cup and still have room for, well, you wouldn't have a lot of, yeah, you get my meaning.
Yep.
And so, you know, it talks about stuff that's actually in Virginia and not in West Virginia. The Blue Ridge Mountains do not in any way, the Blue Ridge Mountains do not in any ways get into West Virginia.
No, that's the valley area, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a little geography from where you, American Civil War.
The Shenandoah River, maybe a tributary creek dribbles out of West Virginia.
Well, it's the Harper's Ferry, of course. We know where that was, where Mr. Brown,
he
produced his little thing, and I've been there a couple of. It's a very amazing place. It's down in the middle of a bowl.
Oh, Harper's Ferry is just gorgeous.
Yeah, very nice. Although in 1862, Lee sent part of his army back to take it, and that's when the orders were lost and found, and half of his army was down at Harper's Ferry, and the rest was up at Sharpsburg, or setting off for Hagerstown. And that lost order stuff is still to this day rather amazing, you know, that copies of his orders were found by guys who were saw a bag with an envelope and three cigars sticking
out
of it.
Yeah, it was just wrapped. Exactly.
Yeah, boy, you know, three cigars, hell yeah, I'm going for that. That's all I mean, what the hell, you're staring at, I worked in this thing on World War One, and my God, what those guys had to stare at every day would have probably found it, you know. I won't even go into detail, but I loved it down there. I've been down there twice, and I forget the road that skirts Maryland Heights and comes up into Sharpsburg. It's 10-20 mile drive, and what's the Pawpaw Bends in the river where they? Have you ever seen that thing where it blew through the mountain?
Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
That was a piece of engineering, and I suppose there was some, I don't know if anybody was living there at the time, I doubt it, you know. But was that a useful piece of engineering, or was it the wrong thing to do?
I don't really know. I mean, that's like the canal works that they put through, what, around Cumberland? They were useless as soon as they were built because of the rise of the railroad.
Well, Panama was an interesting canal, and of course, I don't know which is more important, the Panama or the Suez in its day. But the Suez was, when you look at it, it was not too difficult a thing. It was a pretty narrow wagon bridge, you know? And that opened up, instead of going around the tip of Africa, you could get where you're going, and of course, the problem is, Bob, it wasn't exploration. It wasn't, it was all for the money. It's the old story. How do you get there from here to there? Why do you want to go so quick? I want to make money.
Sure.
The old story, but I had to stop because that voice got me, man. Whoever it was, you could feel it, and that's been the thing that always motivated with me toward any kind of music. Can I feel what's going on? What am I getting? It's like I love New Orleans jazz, but I also like the swing bands for the same reason. There's a bunch of things going on at once, and your mind has to grab all of them as it's being done. Anyway, I'll let you go. But that music, that was a knockout. Thank you.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Bill. You have yourself a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And it looks like we're kind of on a roll here. Let's go over to the Skype line. I do believe we've got our buddy, the Angry Indian. Is that you, Angry?
Hey, my man. How you doing?
I'm freezing. How about you?
Freezing. Yeah, it's pretty cold over here too.
Well, I mean, no, we've entered that season here where I'm reminded that spring and fall are not too bad back here in the studio, but high summer is a sauna and winter is a meat locker.
Well, there's some Asian winds coming in, as they like to call it over here in Portlandia. You know, when you get the Asian wind currents to come through here, we feel it. And anyone who thinks that Japan is a fun place to be in the wintertime is absolutely crazy.
No, no, no. It's very cold, especially. And I mean, the northern islands, whoa.
Yeah, so Falling in the Sky Thursday.
Yeah.
Where does one begin?
It's a rose bush today.
Yeah, because I wanted to point out, you know, you just talked about what was going on in Appalachia in terms of coal. And how, you know, difficult it is to get people to, not that anyone doesn't realize that there's a problem, but what to do. And, you know, and I want to point out to your listeners in Appalachia that, you know, what's going down in Ferguson right now as we speak. You know, if you stand up against coal, then you can expect the type of response that they're doing over here in Missouri.
Yeah, oppression is oppression is oppression is oppression, isn't it, Angry?
Well, I mean,
with all due respect to Gertrude Stein and her rose.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, for those who do not understand Appalachian history, I can't remember the names of these two men. One, I believe, was the sheriff, and they went to actually testify against the business community because, you know, they're not monsters. They're not monstrosities. They're not just buildings. They're people too. And these two men were ambushed and shot down before they could ever reach the courthouse.
Yeah, that was Sid Hatfield.
So, you know, I remember that case. I'm not from Appalachia. I'm not Scots Irish.
Yeah, but Angry, you involve yourself in the business of justice. And you, so you know about something like that that happens in 1921. And if I've got my chronology correct, the broad daylight murder of Sid Hatfield on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse was another one of the triggering factors to the Battle of Blair Mountain and the armed march on Logan.
See, now I didn't know about Blair Mountain until I met you. See, then I started looking that up. And yeah, there was a definite connection because, you know, a lot of what we're seeing in Ferguson was done to your folks, but a lot of us because of racism, institutionalized racism. We don't want to make these connections. You know, it's just like, a, you know, on the East Coast, back in Philly, Italians and black folks, we get along with each other, but then we fight with each other over racial things. But at the same time, we're sneaking around the corner to date each other. We're marrying each other, right? You know, there's all of these connections. And then when, you know, the families start to talk at the reunions, where they can actually drop a lot of that stuff after they've had their, you know, third or fourth shot of something.
Yeah.
You know, of some alcohol, then they're like, well, hey, man, you know, I'm Italian. You know, they didn't let us in here, really. You know, they had exclusion laws against Italians up until the 30s. Well, yeah, man, well, this is what happened with us. Blah, 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 blah. Then they start realizing, well, why the fuck are we fighting each other?
There
you
go.
The fact that Jews and Palestinians can't stand each other doesn't make any goddamn sense historically.
Or genetically.
None whatsoever. You know, so we really got to drop this. And, you know, what I'm trying to point out is, what, you know, what you were talking about in terms of, you know, people not being able to put two and two together to realize that we really outnumber these bastards.
Right. Well, that's why it's so frustrating, for instance, relative to the recent election, Angry, to hear Republicans talking about how, oh, this was a victory for the moderate Republicans. Really? Joni Ernst is a moderate, and how is it a victory when national politics are decided by an electorate only 21% of which winds up voting for the winning side?
Man, fuck the GOP. And you can tell them that I said that.
I think you
fuck
just did.
The GOP. All right? You know, they have to cheat. 40,000 applications disappear. You have to cheat. Voter ID, bringing that up even in states where that issue wasn't even raised. You know, honest Republican? Yeah, they can kiss my ass. You know, all of a sudden now the GOP wants to talk about racism because Mia Love has been getting KKK notices sent to her house. Well, Mia Love's had the entire time she's been in politics, the entire time she's been a Mormon, where they didn't even accept African people until not too long ago, you know, to speak about racism. And she hasn't. She hasn't said a word about Ferguson. She hasn't said a word about, you know, every 28 hours a black person is being shot to death in this country, either by law enforcement.
Oh, and what about the KKK flyers going out in Ferguson?
I was coming. I was getting to
I knew you were. I'm just helping.
Here, you know, here we go again. Here the KKK's coming around, right? Has anybody heard of any St. Louis official, any Ferguson official, saying that the KKK has no goddamn business sticking their nose into this issue, and that they're a fucking terrorist organization, and they have no goddamn right to accuse the people in Ferguson of being terrorists? This is ridiculous.
Now, dadgummit, Angry, they are not, the KKK is not a terrorist organization. If they was a terrorist organization, they wouldn't be white.
Well, if I remember correctly, Ulysses S. Grant, probably one of the few Republicans that the Republican Party does not like to mention any goddamn more, he got the laws changed so that they had the Anti-Klan Act. They amended the Constitution to go after those goddamn bastards, right? Because they realized what was going down. But you don't hear the GOP talk about that today. You know, you don't hear them talk about any of this. You know, I challenge any of these goddamn black Republicans, anybody, you know, John Boehner, any of them, you know, Mitch McConnell, any of these suckers, any of these new black folks that have, you know, that have won seats, or, you know, whatever their names are, Cotton, whatever. Where are you when it comes to an issue like this? Here we have a terrorist organization. Don't tell me that the KKK is not a terrorist organization. They have been recognized as a terrorist organization by this government for decades, and they collect money. You couldn't give money to WikiLeaks, but you could give money to the Klan, all right? This is what
That's
I'm
true.
Dealing with as a person of color in the United States. When I got to hear Republicans oh, well, you know, the Democrats, you know, they created the Klan. That was more than 100 fucking years ago. George Wallace got punked out eventually because he was full of shit, okay? He got punked out eventually, and those Democrats ran to the Republican Party, and those Republicans who were supposed to be radical, who didn't want to accept what the hell was happening, went over to the Democrats. Anybody that knows any goddamn thing about what Johnson was dealing with as a Democrat from Texas trying to hang on to his constituency knows what the hell went down. So these Republicans are fucking clowns. They're goddamn lying fucking bastards. They're cheaters. They don't know how to fuck. Well, they have no goddamn platform. That's why they cheat. And I'm sorry. You know, I'm married to a fucking woman. That legitimate rape shit, as far as I'm concerned, just totally cuts off anything the goddamn GOP has to say to me because none of them came down on that.
No.
So fuck them. You know, the hell with them. And when it comes to the Klan showing up in Ferguson, not one motherfucking Republican is saying a goddamn thing about this. Not Ted the Canadian Cruz, not motherfucking Marco Rubio, you know, who fucking lied about his own goddamn family coming here from fucking Cuba. All of them are fucking liars. And not a goddamn one of them will do any fucking thing. Now, it's not that the Democrats are going to do anything because Obama's too fucking scared.
Oh, no. Wait.
It's not his fault. I mean, he's in
no, a... No, but hold on. Because, see, I mean, I've already seen the story, and it's been splattered from home to Rome all over the interweb tubes today. Harry Reid has done given Elizabeth Warren a position forming progressive policy for the Democrats now that they're the minority.
Yeah, so they wait to get the asses.
Wow, you sounded almost as excited about that as I was.
Man, you know, hey, they had the entire time Obama's been in office not to challenge these bigots in the GOP that have taken over the GOP. There used to be something respectable about being a goddamn Republican.
There was a time in America, Angry, when you wanted your small town local banker. You wanted that man to be a Republican. Mm-hmm. You wanted him to be conservative, and you wanted him in his three-piece suit, and you wanted him in the church pews every Sunday morning, and you wanted to know that that man would squeeze a penny till Lincoln hollered from his grave. Because, I mean, that's part... You need those folks in your community.
You do. And see, the whole thing about the African community, it wasn't the Lincoln thing. You know, they like to, you know, wash our faces with that. It wasn't the Lincoln thing. It was the idea that Republicans said, look, I may not like this black guy, but the law is the law. You got to give him the job. You got to allow him on the bus. You got to sell him the house. Because that's the law. I don't like him, but that's the law. There were Republicans, I mean bigoted Republicans, who dealt with Muhammad Ali. And they said, look, you know, I don't like what he's saying. I don't like him. But the law is the law. He's got a right to free speech, and he can change his name if he wants to. I can't remember the name of these individuals, but, you know, that was the reason that black people supported the Republican Party. It wasn't that you liked me. It was the fact that the law was the law. With the Democrats, it was always, well,
yeah, that you were at least acknowledging, that they were at least acknowledging the pretense of a level playing field.
Of a level playing field, you know. And they would admit, I don't like it. I don't want my daughter dating you, but... the law is the law. I can't really do anything about it. And they would just suffer in silence. But see, that's not the case. So we got suckers like Glenn Beck talking around, well, I have a neurological problem that this new crack medical thing has identified, and that's why I've been insulting black people and women.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
News,
let's,
all the,
yeah, let's,
you know.
Right. And let's get that out of the way real quick. I didn't have time until, like, earlier today to read into the great Glenn Beck medical. But, see, I remember when he was still with Headline News, and he had some butt surgery. And I'm not discounting anything by calling it butt surgery. It's just what it was. He had
what it was.
And it's incredibly painful. And it will make you nuts. And somebody thought it would be a good idea or left the room long enough for him to be able to crawl out of the pain pill haze and hit record. And he released this screed about his suffering, mm-hmm. And that, you know, and that's one for the ages. And this latest one, no, he is, and I'm probably going to get in trouble with some members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, but dang it, you know, we don't have to agree all the time, we just have to agree not to scream at each other. he is citing a snake oil discipline called chiropractic neurology.
Yeah, I asked my wife, who works in natural stuff. I said, "Hey, have you ever heard of this?" She looked at me. She kind of looked around. She looked up, and she goes, "What were you just reading or something?" And I'm like, and I told her. And she goes, "I've never heard of anything like that." And then, you know, she told me, she went to work, and she asked them both. They're like, "No, who the hell?" And one person out of like 12 said that that was one of the dumbest, quackest, most bullshit goddamn medical things that's running around right now on the far right. On the far right. Like gold and buy these beans and clarified water and all of these miracle cures that, you know, colloidal silver would cure your HIV and your cancer and what have you. This is one of these crack-ass theories that he's using now to explain why he's been acting like a complete fucking fool over the years. So, no. I don't accept it.
And
no.
and of course he was healed by prayer. And the question was asked, I think, last night or the night before, why didn't he, you know, he's moved down to Texas because he couldn't stand to live up there with them liberal elites in Connecticut anymore. And why? Well, I guess that quackery hasn't made it to Texas yet. So he went back to New York, of all places, to find a chiropractic neurologist. Now, you and I both know how this all works. This is the front end of a hustle. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon there'll be, do you have the blahs? Chiropractic neurology is for you. This hour of Glenn Beck brought to you by Dr. E. Pamananda Schmendrick, chiropractic neurologist. Call Dr. Schmendrick at, you know, it's a hustle.
Well, evidently Mormonism wasn't enough. All the prayer in the world wasn't enough.
No.
Mormonism wasn't enough.
No,
you know,
and
for
and
40 wives wasn't enough.
No, and the magic underwear was it could not stave off it. What it boils down to is this guy, and this is not a criticism. This is just my understanding of his background. He comes from a family that is prone to mental illness. He comes from a family prone to mental illness to the point of, I believe, suicide. And it manifests in all kinds of different ways. You know, for the longest, you know, he's a recovering alcoholic
and cocaine user.
And you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, people who have dealt with it can tell you that when you've got these problems, a lot of times you will wind up in situations where you're engaging in self-medication, and mm-hmm. booze and drugs are self-medication.
Which I don't hold that against him.
No, like that's what I'm saying. I'm not criticizing him for it.
I didn't hold it against Bush the second either. You know, or Biden's son. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But see, they have a problem though when it comes to somebody who looks like I do. You know, or like one of my neighbors.
Right. Well, it's kind of like the governor-elect of Texas, Greg Abbott. Now here's an individual who is confined to a wheelchair because of a horrible accident in which a tree fell on him. Now, when the tree fell on Greg Abbott, he turned around and sued everybody all the way to God for creating the tree. And he got a shit ton of money out of it. He got enough money to become Greg Abbott. And a lot of this, and he has also been the beneficiary of the things in the Americans with Disabilities Act that are geared specifically toward access for people with mobility-based disabilities. And yet, he as Attorney General of the state of Texas, and now coming up as Governor of the state of Texas, he is going hand over fist and hammer and tongs to make sure that he closes doors that were opened for him and his disability. He wants to close them for people that have that disability themselves.
Well, as my dad would say,
you know, kiss up, kick down.
Yeah, as my dad would say, I'm all right, Jack.
Right, exactly.
If you're British, you know what I'm talking about, right?
And by the way, you just got a note in from Carol. She says, you know, angry reminds me that I'm sane. I have days where I think there's something wrong with me, and then angry calls, and I mean that in a very, very good way. So, you know, high compliment there. And by the way, Angry, I thought you might appreciate this as well. You may have heard earlier when Diane wrote in from Kansas, Stan, about the fact that her students actually studied the Upper Big Branch disaster. Mm-hmm. And she wrote in following what I said, my response, and she said, the students concluded that there was a serious breach of the social contract between business and community, and using a model in cognitive psychology, they speculated that Blankenship has the moral reasoning usually associated with pre-adolescence. They concluded there is a need for much more government regulation of the industry. This is always the case, that after students get into the facts of these cases, they're not bound by any free-to-choose libertarian philosophy or Republican talking points. They always come out on the side of minimizing harm to community and helping others. Ideology gives way to pragmatism and care for others. This is also the case for the executive PhD students each I teach elsewhere as a visiting professor. And I find that fascinating, Angry. Ideology gives way to pragmatism and care for others. How interesting is it that Diane puts pragmatism in the care in the category of caring for others? Pragmatism as a function of community, as opposed to pragmatism as a function of some sort of economic royalism ideology. I haven't seen or heard that before, and that's one of those beautiful things that Diane brings to us. It is pragmatic to care for the community.
Yeah, but look at the crowd that she's dealing with when we're analyzing this, and then take into account what we see in the schoolyards of any schoolyard anywhere on this planet. Children, you know, tend to not want to harm one another. They tend to be supportive of one another. And, you know, there's like that 10% that's in every population that's just cruddy. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, just,
you
know, bad brains.
It's just bad, you know. Now, for example, for those of you who are into media, you have Master Chef, and then you have this thing called Master Chef Junior, and I've been paying attention to this. Because many of my friends have children, and a couple of them are into cooking. They're very young. And these are like 9, 10, 13-year-olds who are chefs. They cook. I mean, they cook at a restaurant level. And it's really interesting to watch how they interact with each other as opposed to how the adults do on the regular show, where there's competition. They don't like each other. They don't like, you know, one woman doesn't like the way the other one wears her hair, and you know, she makes, you know, open comments about this, and someone else comes in, and he's the best one there, and fuck everybody else, and he really can't cook at all. And then you watch these children who obviously have some sense of the world, because they're able to make restaurant-level dishes.
Yeah.
So obviously they come from parents that have education. They can afford to go to the better restaurants. It's not just a matter of following a recipe. They understand what the presentation is supposed to be like, and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So my wife and I were noticing on how when one of them starts to get upset because they didn't, you know, like do an aspect of the dish correctly, they burned something, or maybe it was undercooked, that the others are like, you can do it, let's just keep going, come on. They're encouraging. When one of the other children starts crying, the other ones come around and they're like, it's okay, it'll pass, even if you end up getting sent home, it's not the end of the world. They support one another. We are really taught because of systems, the types of systems that we're raised in, to be the types of people that we are. I mean, your innate personality is still going to be who the hell you are. But a lot of fellas I know, or knew really, because a lot of them are gone now, they grew up to be thieves and thuggish men because they had no choice. They had to eat. They had to survive. And, you know, when they got that little bit of a chance in their late 40s and 50s to be able to not have to, no, to deal with that, if they were lucky enough to be able to do that, almost all of them would break down with me and just cry and say, man, you know, I don't even know why I did a lot of the shit that I did, man. You know, I hurt people, you know, but then I got hurt too. And then, you know, I didn't care about anybody. Then I didn't care about myself. And, you know, we have a society here that, you know, capitalism in and of itself, in order for it to work, you have to not give a damn about the other person. You have to be willing to exploit. You have to be willing to not.
Well, the whole thing is predicated on that. It's not a matter of willingness. It is a condition precedent to the existence of capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, like I said, we can read Orwell and get deeper with that. And there's a whole lot of other people we can read that we can mention you know, that gets deeper into that. But looking at children, I think in a lot of ways, you know, it is something, because they don't have any preconceived notions as of yet, other than what they've actually seen. And when they see someone cry, they, to them, instinctively, I should find a way to help this person. I should find a way to find out what's wrong so that I can stop what's making this person upset. And when you ask a lot of them, well, why were you so concerned? Well, if I was crying, I wouldn't want anyone to not care. And then we have adults here who say, hey, man, if a drone does whatever, I don't give a damn because I'm able to go to Walmart. I'm able to get this, you know, olive oil.
So when, so when does the transition take place?
Well, the transition takes place probably like most goddamn things when everything hits bottom. You know, which it doesn't have to be.
Well, no, I mean in terms of human development.
Well, that's what I mean, in terms of things actually hitting bottom. I mean, Malcolm X put it very, you know, very clearly before he was taken from this planet, when he's like, you know, the United States is the only country in the world that is in a unique position. It can avoid all this revolution, all this violence, all this, you know, stuff by simply giving the poor people of the world, not just black folks, but the poor people of the world and women, they just do. You know, I don't know anybody who ever got into crime. I'm talking about people I grew up with as opposed to people I knew as I, you know, as I matured, in my, you know, as I grew up. People I grew up with went into crime because they had no choice. I knew some white-collar criminals who ended up going to the joint. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They didn't need to steal. They didn't need to embezzle. They were just greedy. And they came around at a time, they were in their 20s, when greed was good down in, you know, in Wall Street. And these were young white guys that didn't have too much else going for them, but they were able to get their Class 7 license. And they went up to New York. And they made money, but it wasn't enough. So they continued to keep going. And they got caught up. You know, they walked into a culture that says, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens. Whereas, you know, I grew up in a place where people did things, they would cry while they did it. I knew cats that would rob people. This is back when I was a teen. They used to rob people and cry about it because their mother needed, you know. They had, you know, brothers and sisters they needed. These were not people who were driving in big cars and running around with gold chains and, you know, welfare queens. These are people who needed to survive. And you push people into these, you know, these situations, they build cultures around this. So now we have cultures that are just, you know, built around crime. And it's not just the United States. France is dealing with the same thing. Romania is dealing with the same thing. Russia has had this problem for centuries, where you have ingrained Siberian gangs that we will look at as gangs, but these are cultures where they feel that it's completely correct for them to rob certain, you know, populations or certain groups in the populations, that they have a right to do this because they've been oppressed for so long. Because they've been oppressed as Siberians. You have groups like this in China that have been, you know, habitually oppressed over the centuries. And they formed the Tongs. They formed the Triads. So, you know, I mean, the Yakuza, 98% of the Yakuza is made up of what is called the Barukamen. These are people in Japan who are the descendants of the latrine cleaners and the slaughterhouse, you know, workers and the people who tanned leather. They had the worst jobs. They don't look any different than any other Japanese, but they come from certain neighborhoods and have certain names. And because of that, they cannot get anywhere in life. You can even be granted a divorce if your partner did not tell you beforehand that he or she was a Barukamen. So they get into the gangster life. And it's not like, well, I have no choice at this point. They grow up looking forward to getting into this and preparing themselves to this because this is the culture that they have been left with. And in terms of capitalism, we're told to be greedy. We're being taught now by conservatives that women have a place and that they must be kept in that place and that it's okay to threaten them if they complain about their treatment. You know, that it's okay to abuse black people who complain about their treatment. It's okay to abuse, you know, immigrants provided they don't come from Europe. Because I don't hear anybody bitching about the South African Boers that come here. I don't hear anyone complaining about the Irish from Northern Ireland that come here. I don't hear anyone complain about a lot of the, you know.
No. Like so many words, immigrant is immigrant is a freighted word.
Mm-hmm.
Immigrant means black or brown.
Well, nowadays it didn't always, but it does now.
No, I'm talking about in the current context.
Mm-hmm.
So you know when it's another dog whistle word, angry. when Joe Barton in Texas says immigrant, we all know he means somebody from the global south.
Did people still use that term?
What?
Global north and south?
I do. I mean, yeah.
I just haven't heard it for a while. Did you see that? That was like one of those, you know, remember Main Street? Main Street.
Main Street. Yeah, I love it. Main Street.
You know, you don't hear about Main Street any goddamn more, right? You know, the hell with Main Street, you know. Anyway, man, I'll leave you, man, so you can speak to some people. But, you know, it's just like we, you know, Howard Dean, who I actually almost got a job with when I was still living in Washington State because there weren't too many minorities that showed up to his meetings where they were trying to get people, you know, excited for him when he was running for the nomination, you know, from the DNC. And they actually offered me a job, not because I had any particular skills, because I was one of the few people that showed up of color and asked questions and had something to say, which says what?
You mean the Olu factor?
It was the Olu factor. And, you know, that's how a lot of people become officers in political organizations, because they keep showing up to the meetings. You understand what I'm saying? They pay the dues, if there are any, and they keep showing up to the meetings. And after a while, you will be made an officer, whether you really have any knowledge, skill, experience, you know, none. And that's what ends up happening with a lot of these things. I mean, does anybody really think the Reverend Al Sharpton, with his shady background, and I'm not even talking about him being a snitch for the Bureau. I'm talking about him being a snitch against the Black Power, you know, / liberation movement. He got up there because he was always in front of a camera, not because he was actually doing anything. And now he's on MSNBC, which is pretty much proof that he never did anything. You see? Juan Williams used to be a supposed radical. What is he doing now?
Yeah, he's cashing the check over at Fox.
Right? Geraldo Rivera, you know, they were part of the same group, the Brown Berets, right, in New York City. What are they doing now?
Yeah, but you know what? And you don't have to hurry off unless you're in a hurry.
No, go ahead.
I think you just opened a door there. And that's this. And, you know, the typical rubric is of the hippies who were going to change the world in the late 60s, and then they woke up one morning and said, you know, I'd really like to go out into the economy and have a nice living and blah, 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 and, you know, and quit sleeping on floors.
The Tom Hayden syndrome.
Yeah, but as I've grown older, I admit, I think about that kind of stuff because the perpetual struggle and the daily, you know, the daily sweating of everything gets awful goddamned old after a while.
Yeah, it does.
And you work and you struggle, and look, I'll throw my own experience in here with the 8 campaign, and I'm not complaining about the campaign because I'm affiliated with some magnificent, some brilliant people.
Yeah, but you're in the real struggle, you know.
But the fact of the matter is, I have watched for 10 years now people stand up to a multi-billion-dollar industry that would as quick kill them as look at them. And if they could get away with it, would have done so long since. Okay? And every month, they're out there and they're doing the work and they're calling attention to the abuses. And the eco-aristocracy, and look, I mean, we can be a little Marxist here, can't we?
It's always okay with me.
Yeah, well, the eco-aristocracy, which is operating on a strictly capitalist model, is more than happy to watch these people struggle, you know, and I'm not talking about trying to decide whether to buy Kroger brand water or Evian. I'm talking about can't afford the Kroger water. I'm talking about living in shitty apartments with bad utilities and barely enough to call it a roof over their head. praying to Jesus a tire doesn't blow out every goddamn day. And this is not about me. This is about a lot of other people. And watching them engage in bravery that the people in the eco-aristocracy would drop dead if called upon to display. And at the same time, the eco-aristocracy sit at making six-figure salaries. Mm-hmm. Six-figure salaries, Angry. And watch and thinking that people are content to be called grassroots heroes. I've watched some of these big greens ride people that I loved into the dirt. Larry Gibson, Judy Bonds.
Judy Bonds, yeah. That's a name that we all should know. We all should know who that woman was and what she was doing.
Well, I mean, she wasn't just an inspiration to me. She was my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's galling. It's infuriating, Angry. Because people aren't doing this because they got nothing better to do. They're doing it actually because their morals and their ethics and their consciences exist at a higher plane than their own regard for themselves. I've been to a million billion seminars, and sooner or later there'll be a breakout session. No, it won't even be a breakout session. It'll be a session that everybody has to be at, and it'll be entitled Self-Care.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. People have to be told again and again and again, do not kill yourself for this struggle, because you're no good dead.
You know,
but you know what? Everybody sits there and goes, yeah. And then so you're taking a break, and everybody's standing around with their tea or their coffee, and you go, well, you know, do you have what do you say maybe next week we get together and go to a movie? Oh, I can't, man. I'm planning this action. So the self-care thing goes right by the boards because the larger struggle is more important. And if you're involved in one of these things, you don't get to... Look, if you're working on the other side, if you're the media coordinator for the Friends of Coal, 5 o'clock comes and, you know, you're not the media coordinator for the Friends of Coal anymore because you're off the damn clock. And you go home and you look in the mirror and you pretend that you're just a regular working sod and you don't think about the fact that you're poisoning people for a paycheck. And you get up the next morning and do it again, amen. On the other hand, the grassroots person, and I do have personal experience of this. I used to talk with Judy back when mountaintop removal was still sexy enough that we were getting some funding. Mm-hmm. And I said, Judy, you know, we're killing ourselves. We are wearing ourselves out. You know, let's take a little bit of the budget and go on a retreat. We work in the mountains, let's go to the beach. We work in the hills, let's go to somewhere flat. Let's go somewhere with the understanding we are. And she said, Bob, I love the idea, but there's no point in it. It'd be wasted money. And I said, why? And she said, because we'd get there and this is all we'd talk about. Because it's all we ever talk about. Because it's our world.
That is what we talk about. That's exactly what we talk about. We talk about the struggle, whatever struggle is we're in at the time, and then we ask the people around us.
And so when people come around at some point and they go, you know what? I'm leaving. I'm going to go and I'm going to get me a job. I'm going to, you know, maybe I can be in corporate communications, or I'm going to go get me a job at a car plant, or I'm going to go be a paralegal, or. You know, and I'm not going to give a damn what kind of harm I'm doing to somebody else. Yeah, you know, I don't look at them and say, you know, fucker, sell out. I don't do that. Because there's only so much you can ask of people. You remember the movie Reds, right?
Oh, of course.
Read
the book.
Yerzy Kosinski played... which Bolshevik did he play?
I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've seen
that. Well, there's this scene where Warren Beatty as Jack Reed walks into this big, vast, empty room and says, you know, comrade, I got to get home. I got a wife. And Yartsey Kosinski is sitting there slicing a lemon and says, would you like a piece of lemon? His last lemon in Russia. I too have wife. We both have revolution. I would like to see my wife too. Comrade Reed, there is work for you in revolution. There will be no going to your wife. And you know, I can't endorse something like that. But you know what? The capitalist eco-aristocracy is more than happy to do that.
Well, yeah and no. There's a difference. And I will argue, well, not with you, but I'm just saying that there is a difference. Because the revolutionary, even if they're on the wrong side of history, what makes the revolutionary different from everybody else? And you know, again, revolutionary in English, in the Anglophone world especially, because of the history of colonialism, has a bad, bad, bad connotation. Just like radical. Associating ISIS with radical is a really bad association that isn't accurate. And they're jacking up language with this propaganda. The revolutionary, you know, really is supposed to be about justice. Now, the problem is, of course, is the debate on what justice looks like. And, you know, a revolution can, you know, well, often, especially when, you know, when we looked at negative revolutions, they're completely wild. I mean, as much has been said about what happened in Cuba, you know, under Castro and his brother, you know, during the 50s, it was much more logical and ideological as opposed to, say, what's been happening in Africa since the 1970s, where these were the strong men supported by European mercenaries and, you know, American and British and French and Belgian, German intelligence, you know, doing the Cold War against, you know, basically the entire Soviet Union and their satellite nations. You know, they were marked as revolutions, but you can only really point out a couple. And a couple that were racial revolutions, and say, like Patrice Lumumba. There wasn't a shot fired when Patrice Lumumba and his people won the head of government. They became the government in what was the former Belgian Congo. They became politicized. You know, we do not associate revolutionary thinking and revolutionary action anymore with being political, simply. With being aware politically, on standing on the fact that if you have free speech in the Constitution, you have a right to free speech. This is what Republicans used to do. Well, it's in the law. Like they like to tell us, if you don't like the law, then work to change the law. Right? But the point is, the law is the law, right? You're supposed to obey the law. Okay, well, the law says that the average person here has right to free speech. Now, I said average, and I put quotes around that for a reason, because the KKK have proven that they are not average. They have proven through their violent history that they have no business associating themselves with any concept of democratic rule, of the Constitution, of free speech, of freedom in general. But yet they consider themselves to be revolutionaries. They consider themselves to be victims, right? They've been saying this since Reconstruction, that they're victims. So that's why I'm saying we really need to be careful about the language that we use and really challenge Fox News, which is really responsible, and the intelligentsia of this country, totally responsible for jacking up language so much that we can't even really have a conversation about these things. I mean, I'm dealing with black people who are, you know, making, you know, actually fighting, having fist fights in the street over whether or not we should call ourselves niggas, whether or not we have a right to do this. This is how crazy and confusing things have gotten. You know, I mean, cracker, the term cracker used to have a meaning at one point, right? And
yeah.
I'm sure it does in Florida and in Georgia, but it's completely confusing now.
Well, and Appalachia, it was, among other things, it was a term that was used to refer to the cracking of corn.
Yeah, right. And with some people like the Gullah, right, you know, even though we knew, at least is the way it was told for me in my family. Because we call white people buckra, right? You know, but we would use the term cracker specifically because we would sometimes, you know, have to work with cracker overseers. They weren't our owners, but they would work for the owners.
No, they were worse.
Swamplands.
They were worse.
Yeah. So, you know, and we associated cracker with being whipped by them. So crack, the crack of the whip, the cracker man. So, you know, it's, you know, it's confusing, but it gets confusing because the people don't know the history, and the history isn't taught here. You know, when you have American students that only know about World War II because it came after World War I, you have a real problem. And people don't want to pay for education. That's another problem. Republicans, at least this current Republican clutch of numbfucks, they don't believe in paying for education, especially if they don't have any children of their own. Which is ridiculous. You want your nation to be strong, educate, and properly feed everybody. And you'll have exactly the type of powerhouse that you want.
But
see,
if
the left understands this.
Yeah, but wait, are we not engaging in something just a wee bit flawed, angry? Aren't we assuming that there's something inside the right-wing structure that wants an educated populace? Doesn't their power model thrive on uneducated people?
Well, yeah, and that's a problem for the rest of us, because then you'll be stuck. And if you really, you know, want to really look and see what that looks like in actual practice, and I hate to say this to my African for my African brothers and sisters, and I do apologize, but facts are facts. Let's look at Africa. I'm writing about this right now. Let's look at Africa. It's not that black people are stupid. It's just that black people are not prepared. Okay, you have leaders. I know this because I read what the white guys who go there to do business with Africans say. I gave this man the application. I gave him the other booklet that had the other data for our firm, and he's looking at it. And I realized, as I was looking over his shoulder explaining a point, that my assistant has stapled one of the pages upside down, and he's still reading the document like he understands what the fuck is on the sheet. This is somebody that was groomed and paid to become a leader in his nation. And the same thing goes on in Asia. The same thing goes on in South America.
Well, and what I think you've identified something there, Angry, and it's this. In revolution, there is always the risk, and I think this is, and you know, somebody like Dr. John, you, Sandra, can correct me. But the reason Marx talks, you know, Marx wasn't just throwing shit up against the wall to see if it would stick. There's a reason he talks about the revolution, the dictatorship of the proletariat, you know, leading to the glorious future when there's complete autonomy and equality among workers. And he's got that dictatorship of the proletariat phase in there. Because there's always the risk in revolution that you're going to have a group that people seize power who merely want to replace an old corrupt power structure with a new corrupt power structure. Mm-hmm. The difference being, I got mine, Jack. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the basis of Leninism, that, you know, if we don't continue the revolution, and Trotsky for that matter, if we don't continue the revolution, then everything we fought for is just going to go right back to the way it was. It's just under new ownership.
And let's also remember, as my dear friend Eugene Finnerman, who is one of the more brilliant historical minds and a satirist into the bargain out there, he's at FinnermanWorks.com. One of the things he recently pointed out is that, you know, Marx had promulgated his theory of a communist revolution on the idea that it would happen in an advanced industrialized society.
Yeah, not Russia. Yeah.
Which by default, and I mean no insult, means not Russia.
No, it wasn't. Nobody expected that. He wasn't even, I mean, Lenin, for example, wasn't even in the country when it happened. He was in exile. He came back at the last minute when he realized it was going down.
Well, the Germans paid his train fare from Switzerland to Russia.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, they were just working, they were working both ends against the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we're going to talk about this,
I don't want to run off down the Russian rabbit hole so much as I want to ask the question, is it viable to think that you can, is it just a flaw of our nature, our DNA? And I know I'm already in quicksand saying something like that. to think that you can have social upheaval and radical change without some level of I got mine jack corruption riding shotgun with it.
Well, without education, no. See, and this is what the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense identified, and that's why a lot of, the particular leaders that were targeted by COINTELPRO and the CHESMAR program and the Black Desk that were run by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, when they went after, for example, in Chicago, Fred Hampton Jr., Fred Hampton Sr., the main reason that they got him, we're talking about a 20-year-old, pretty much self-educated, African, that he didn't really have a criminal background, but he was a street kid who was able to relate to people because he actually gave a damn about his neighbors. And when he became radicalized, in the true sense of the term, the radix, Latin, getting to the root, he realized that, race is an issue, but it's more of a class issue, Not to excuse race at all, because the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense at no time ever you've removed race from their structural analysis. But the point is, he was able to identify exactly why. I mean, he was one of the Black Panther Party leaders that actually said that the weather underground was crazy, that they had absolutely nothing to do with.
I'm sitting here and I can tell you, that I can come up with a list pretty quick of people that I don't want running post-revolutionary anything, and it's not all right wingers, okay? And it's not the usual cast of characters that we see, that we see as the DLC middle of the roaders. Mm-hmm. There are so-called liberals that I wouldn't. Oh my God! I'm not trying to get all FEMA camp or anything.
Well, no. But this is what Fred Hampton was talking about, and this is one of the reasons why he, as a leader, was removed as an analyst, because he would point out to many of the organizations that he dealt with, because remember, the Black Panther Party dealt internationally. The Black Panther Party had liaison with the Palestine Liberation Organization. They had liaison with the Irish Republican Army on a political basis. They didn't involve themselves in anything that they did, but they were politically, they were connected. They were in contact with each other. And, one of the things that really came out was, that really came out about a lot of this was, that, the Black Panther Party was not talking revolution for the simple fact that they realized that the African population was not ready for it. It's not that we didn't have, doctors and what have you. We didn't have people who knew how to form the infrastructure to actually form a government, even though we did have the new African government, which was in Tanzania. A lot of people don't even know about this. That they're folks that can talk about the IRA, but they can't tell you anything about the Black Liberation Army, otherwise known as BLA. It's not that we weren't there, but they have realized, those that have survived, that, this militant stance was jumped on really, really quick, that, that they had to start to realize that if we don't check ourselves, we're going to end up with a new dictatorship. It might be black, but it'll still be a dictatorship. And then what the hell was all of this about? If we're going to be just as evil as the people that we're trying to, bring out of power, then what's the point of all of this? And every revolutionary has to ask themselves this. What you're supporting, is this really about justice? Is this really about fairness and equality? I mean, you have to ask yourself, anybody that talks about the two-state solution in Palestine, you can go ahead and say one state. It sounds, it's emotional and it sounds good, but you better have something for these Ashkenazim. You better have something for the Jewish population because they used terrorism to get Israel in the first place. Remember what happened to the King David Hotel.
Sure, and the Irgun.
Yeah. You have to acknowledge people who have a need. I can't stand the Klan. I cannot stand the White Patriot Party. I can't stand David Duke or none of them. But if they really feel that they just want to have a white country, then let them have a goddamn spot that nobody fucking cares about somewhere in Europe so they can have their goddamn homeland and leave the rest of us alone. And do to them what you do to Iran. Do not allow them to have nuclear power. Do not allow them to have nuclear weapons. Do not allow them to have a standing army. Put the precise treatment on them, right? And not allow them to develop in terms of a warlike state. But give them what they want. They want us, interbreed like that, let them go. Because if you don't give these freaks their goddamn way, like these jerks you have in the GOP, they spend the rest of their time and all of their goddamn billions that they got from screwing over everybody else from being bullies to get what they want. Let them have what they want in their corner of the fucking world and let us forget about them and move on. We don't need these jerks. The revolutionary is actually trying to change things for the better. When you start talking about, well, we're going to do this for our race and nobody else's. See, you can forget about me supporting you, having anything to do with you. You know, well, it's just our religion and no one else's. Well, I'm not interested. And we need to start telling these people that we're not interested in your bullshit. Because by giving them airtime, by giving them, you know, like people like Glenn Beck and these jerks.
Well, and how much, you know, and how much difference is there between that and say, and just because, folks who listen from like Australia have informed me on the, you know, an from times not that far past, Australia for Australians, you know, which Australians? Or you know, anything that smacks of a sort of separatism, and this goes back to something I've raised in the past that I think we're seeing a devolution from the principles that formed, you know, the peace, the peace of Osnabrück, the peace of Westphalia, you know, that created the idea of the nation state.
The idea of it, yeah, yeah. Well, you remember what Hitler said about that? He was like, well, hey, that was a dream that was thought about by some pansies, basically, who got the idea that all of Europe is equal. You know?
Yeah. Well, let me shift gears with you real quick. One last thing, if you don't care. Because I wanted to make sure we got to it this evening, because it is a it formed a thorn in my side. I was sitting up late a couple of nights ago. Sleeping has become a bit of a challenge lately, just because of the way my neck's behaving.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear about that. Man.
No worries. I mean, you know, it just sucks. It is, you know, you can't go to the not a doctor and say give me something for pain, because, well, you know, you're a hillbilly, and you know if you get with it, everybody knows that if you get within 300 yards of a pain pill, that, you know, you'll wind up some sort of plate glass window breaking junkie.
Unless you're Rush Limbaugh.
Right. But anyway, so I was sitting up late when the news broke of the big, big agreement about climate that was entered into by the United States and China. Mm-hmm. And I went to read up on it because, well, I mean, and the first I saw of it was via the New York Times. And so I read what they had to say, and then I went and read an article that had been posted by Mother Jones, and I posted something on Facebook because I just went, well, son of a bitch. You know what one of the centerpieces of this agreement is, Angry?
Well, there's a few, but go ahead.
China, the United States is going to partner. You know, that's kind of like being a team member at Walmart, I think. You know, we use all this Orwell language anymore. But we're going to partner with China in helping China advance carbon capture and sequestration technology. And this is going to be one of the, this is going to be how they're going to be able to keep on burning coal like a son of a bitch and, you know, not just heating up the plant at the roasting point when, you know, when nature has its own revolution, whether we like it or not. And I just went, well, I'll be damned. Because see, I remembered back when, Waxman Markey passed the House. And, of course, there was a right-wing fit thrown, and the UMWA threw a fit, and the coal industry threw a fit. Oh, they're going to kill us! And there were billions of dollars for carbon capture and sequestration technology in the United States. Well, now we're going to do it in China. This is assuming it can be made to work, and there's a certain amount of magical thinking involved with that, Angry, insofar as, I mean, you know, the thinking behind carbon capture and sequestration is that we're going to keep burning coal, and we're going to burn even more. And this is going to apply to oil, gas, whatever, too, because carbon's carbon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep the carbon from going into the atmosphere by somehow magically capturing it and compressing it and putting it under the earth. And being a gas, it's sudden, and being a gas that we've stuck under the earth somehow, it's going to stop obeying Boyle's gas laws and just sit quiescently there and behave itself and never go anywhere.
You mean like that lake at the bottom, that lake of oil at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico?
Or the lake of CO2 under the lake in Africa that periodically boils out and kills a few thousand people with, you know, just plain old CO2. It's just going to sit there. It's going to behave itself. It's not going to go anywhere, which I think is silly because, and okay, I'm going to be a little gross here. Anybody who has ever had an attack of, and, you know, the average human being farts about 13 times a day, I think I read somewhere, even women, and that's not sexist, that's just, there's a different mindset about it. You know, we guys, we weren't. But anybody who's ever had a bad attack of, you know, intestinal gas knows that you can sit there and you'll, and maybe you're in a meeting or whatever and you don't want to, and so you just kind of, and it boils back up through your gut. But a little bit later it goes, and boils back down again, and you're like, no, really, no, and back, but sooner or later, it's the pressure, and it's, you know, right there on in front of the board of directors. Well, the same principles apply to carbon capture and sequestration. There is no human technology that's going to keep it in place, and that's, and you have to, how can you not, from an engineering perspective, factor in human failings? You know, dams break, bridges collapse, roads crumble, and sequestered carbon gets out. And so what happens if it's successful and you've got 200 years of captured carbon and the system fails and all into the atmosphere at one time?
Well,
we have to stop burning this shit.
But what the capitalist community will do is that they'll have a huddle. They'll meet at one of the Bilderberger meetings. And fuck Alex Jones and that conspiracy shit. I mean, that's not the Illuminati. These are just the world goddamn movers and shakers. They get together to fucking talk about how they're going to continue business. It's a mafioso fucking powwow. That's all it is. And, you know, this came up supposedly doing that bullshit. And, yeah, man, you know, they're going to sit there. I mean, I'm not into scatology, but you're talking about Hitler. I mean, you know, he had a serious problem with flatulism. And I know Nazis don't like to hear this, and I know they don't like to hear that he was a closeted homosexual either. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, his problems with his gut, according to his doctor, sometimes put him in fits of rage to where entire towns probably got wiped out that didn't need to be wiped out, you know. It's a stupid analogy in a lot of ways, and I'm being, you know, facetious.
And we can do that.
But what you're talking about is, you know, damn near the same sort of mentality. That, okay, well, I'll just hold it. And I'll continue to hold it. And then at some point when I'm on a train going through occupied France, you know.
Or sitting next to the dog.
You know, yeah, you know, Blondie, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, carbon capture and sequestration technology is going to require a really goddamn big dog,
you know,
to blame it on.
Yeah, so while he and Blondie are sitting there, you know, annoying everybody who's afraid to say any goddamn thing because this is the Fuhrer, right? So, you know.
No wonder he didn't like smoking. He was afraid he'd blow up.
Hey, we're in the same position. We know full goddamn well what the business community is doing to us and the politicians, the whores, basically, that are supposed to represent us, you know, by black letter rule, but represent, you know, their constituents, you know, really the people who are paying them, not us. You know, they will go ahead and do this because it will allow business to continue. And in the meantime, they will, you know, flood the air, the atmosphere, while we're all more worried about UFOs and whether or not you come back as a cat or something. You know, we're so worried about.
Did you see why Honey Boo Boo got canceled?
No, and I kind of don't give a damn about her.
I'm just being a smartass. But well, okay, so there's one more thing in there that drove me crazy. There were at least two or three references to, and China promises to get to a zero emissions policy using zero emissions energy technologies like, and every time it went the same way, nuclear, wind, and solar, and geothermal.
Yeah,
well, nuclear. I don't love it. I despise it. But the idea that in a post-Fukushima, post-Chernobyl world, we can still refer to nuclear power as a zero-emissions energy technology just absolutely blows my mind.
Well, you're going back to Chernobyl. you and I remember Chernobyl, right? I read everything that was about Chernobyl. My best friend at the time was Russian. That's all we talked about was goddamn Chernobyl. But what about Fukushima? We're looking at a China syndrome.
Let's talk some more about that zero emissions nuclear technology. And, of course, it's an agreement between the Chinese and government, the United States government, which means that if any of this is even implemented, what this means is that we're telling the Chinese that we're okay with General Electric sending them the same nuclear reactor technology that we sent to TEPCO. They are.
Look, the idea of still calling them communists is a goddamn joke. That's a joke. You know, if we're going to talk about Marxism, let's talk about Marxism. The simple fact that they haven't put up anything for ratification in terms of their own populace with this issue. And there is resistance to nuclear energy in China. You have to look at the Asian press to find it. Because you're not going to read it anywhere in the Anglophone world. But there's resistance. There are people protesting in China about a lot of goddamn things. You only hear about the pro-democracy, let-in General Electric type of arguments. But in this case, there's a large segment of the population that's against this. But they can't do anything about it. I mean, in Cuba, they have actually voted against nuclear energy. In China, there was never a vote raised. You know, in any of the Arab kingdoms, never a vote. Well, they don't vote about any goddamn thing. They're not allowed to vote about anything. And we're supporting that. You know, and I'm being very, flippant with the we. Because, you know, these people do not represent me. They don't represent you or anybody just listening to the horn.
What do you mean? Yeah, what do you mean we pale face? That old joke.
Well, no, not even that. I mean, you know, this says people who live here. You know, we pay taxes because we have no choice. Coats Industries doesn't pay a goddamn dime in taxes. But then they complain. And this is my main thing about conservatives. They want everything, but they don't want to pay for it.
Right. Well, and so, we can ask the eternal question, and I've asked it before, Angry. When are we going to get around to asking the Republicans just to tell us how much tax is okay? Or if they just don't ever want to pay any taxes at all, just say so and we'll know.
And then
we can have a legitimate discussion about that.
Yeah, but they will never answer that because that will force it into a legitimate discussion, which they don't want to have. But see, the other problem, though, was on the left. And this is why I mentioned Howard Dean. I wasn't saying that to say, I got close to getting a job in his campaign.
No.
Maybe I would have been somebody. Well, no, that's not the issue. The issue is he just said it not too long ago. If you continue to remain scared, if you continue to play GOP light, because as I said on my own goddamn show, here it is. When you look at these Democrats, when they were asked point blank, what do you support in the Obama administration? Don't you support your president? They all said the same thing. Not really. They said it in different ways, but they all said, no, not really. The bottom line was, the president is a nigger. The GOP does not like him. The average white guy on the street is still upset about this. They don't want this. If I say anything about it, they'll come down on me, and I won't get reelected, or I won't get elected. Matter of fact, I might even lose my goddamn legal practice if I say that Obama has a right to be president and that he's right about, you know, health care and blah, 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 even though we all know the health care was really a scam. You know, if we're going to talk about Marxism, let's talk about health care. Let's ask ourselves why Cuba can provide, you know, world-class health care, not just in Cuba, but around the world, including Ebola in Africa, and United States, well, you'll just die if you don't have health care. And then if Ron Paul raises the question at the RNC debates, they'll say, let that person die. Why are we even coddling these bastards? They have no opinion. They're just a bunch of scared, punk-ass motherfuckers who need to take a goddamn field-grade weapon with them into a Walmart. Why are we scared of these fucking people? Why are we scared of them? They are greedy sons of bitches. And just like the types of folks that you talk about in Appalachia, they won't get a goddamn thing supporting big coal. It's killing their families.
I'm waiting for the West Virginia Coal Association to announce that the indictment of Don Blankenship is just another aspect of Obama's war on coal.
Oh, they will. It's just a matter of seconds, you know. And don't hold your breath, because you know it's coming.
Yeah.
You know it's coming, you know. He's a Marxist, and he hates business, and he hates America, and he hates white people, and he's a secret Muslim, and he and his wife are planning a race war. You know, this is the crapola that we've been hearing ever since he got into office. I mean, the Klan in Missouri said that the best recruitment thing that they've ever had was his election. And that's one of the reasons why the national Klans supported his election, because they knew that the people around them who were saying under their breath, I really don't want these niggas in this goddamn Starbucks with me. There's too many fucking immigrants in here, that they will lose their top once. You know,
look at firearms manufacturers and ammo manufacturers. They can't make the stuff fast enough.
Yeah. Well, look. The U.S. is the number one goddamn arms exporter and has been for more than 11 years. It used to be England, but that was a long time ago. There used to be some rivalry. There isn't anymore. The biggest rival right now is Israeli arms. But the funny thing is that, and I gotta say this, Bob, the Israeli arms industry is wholly fucking funded by the U.S. goddamn taxpayer. And they keep the profits. So explain that to me when we see homeless people on the street. When they spent, what was it, $40 million, whatever it was, on this goddamn last election, billion, whatever it was. And we got homeless families in America. And the GOP doesn't say one motherfucking thing about this. Not one black Republican will say a goddamn word. And Blankenship will walk. Okay? They were calling Ron, what was it, Lay from Enron. They were comparing him to Martin Luther King and Jesus Christ at his funeral. So don't think that Don Blankenship isn't going to get some carte blanche somewhere along the line.
Like I said, they won't even set a bond for him that they would set for the killer of one person, let alone 29.
Well, hey, if Dan Wilson can hide out, if the cop that shot Vonderit Myers when he was off duty can hide out, and they won't name him, and not show for court appearances and so on, but they'll throw a goddamn, AR-15 in the face of a mother holding her child on the streets of America while talking about they got a right to protest in China for democracy.
I know.
Yeah, there's a contradiction going on here.
Oh, well, there was some remark that Obama made in China that set me on fire because... my immediate response was to tweet out something about what about the people who are poisoned every day in Appalachia.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to remember exactly what that remark was, but I'm coming up dry. Angry, this has been a magnificent conversation, my friend.
All right, my friend.
And I appreciate it. You have yourself a good evening.
All right, everybody. And look, if you can support this show, please.
Yeah,
please
we are $112 away from the evening's goal.
I know it's hard. I don't even have a credit card. You dig what I'm saying? I understand that it's hard. But do what you can to keep Bob on the air. All right, everybody. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. Bye now.
All right.
Our good friend, the Angry Indian. Man, he packs a lot into a single conversation. Let's keep it rolling and run over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Paul from Parts Unknown.
Hey, my goodness gracious. Paul, how in the world are you?
Good. I had an opportunity to call in tonight. Work. That was worked a little earlier out here, and thought I'd give it a try. Tried to call in last Thursday, but you were off the air.
Yeah, that was one of those doctor appointment days.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear about your neck. Hopefully it's fixable.
I hope so, too. The next step is to talk to the neurosurgeon on December the 3rd and find out, you know, what he thinks. Of course, I've had warnings from a couple of quarters now. People who know what they're talking about saying, listen, neurosurgeons are always hasty to want to cut, so make sure you get two or three opinions.
You got access to two or three neurosurgeons out there in Beckley?
No. it might involve some traveling. I hear Cleveland and Rochester, Minnesota are lovely this time of year.
Definitely check out Rochester.
Yeah.
But I don't know Eastern geography all that well. I wanted to call in last week during the whole when we were all talking about voting and the vote, because I wanted to respond to something and just to kind of tell a story of my voting day, because it was sort of an interesting experience. But I wanted to respond to your statement of that you thought sometimes, you know, there's a part of you that says just let the Republicans have it and just let them run with a bit in their teeth as far as they can go.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, you know, how many people get burned in the process.
Right.
And, there are people burning now.
Oh, exactly.
That phrase, stuck with me because the night, last Tuesday last week when I wrote it, I went out and I went to a game store to play some board games because it was a board game night, and I just happened to, I go alone and I just do a pickup group, play some board games and whatnot. And the pickup group I met with three guys that were friends, young guys, early to mid-20s. They're all in the military. And I, played a board game and just played a couple board games with them and chatted with them and got to know them a little bit. And I was, shocked to, well, not shocked, just I kind of guess I had my bubble popped and I kind of got really angry at their situation. They, two of them had already been to Iraq or Afghanistan, and one of them hadn't been yet, and all three of them were trying to push to go back, trying to get in the front line. And, one of them, it turned out, his, older brother, who would be my age if he was still here, went into the military, someone who's 10 years his senior, went to the military and went over there in the early 2000s when Bush was in charge and died over there. And I asked him, why do you want to, your brother served, and you've served, and, why do you want to go back? And, he didn't really, he wasn't really gung-ho, we got to go over there and, fight all this stuff. He just kind of wanted to go back. And he said, he wanted to go back for his buddies, and he wanted to go back because, it's scary over here, he would get the increased combat pay and a bit more of a job security. There's not as much job security over here in America as there is abroad. He wanted to stay in the military because it's what he knew, and kind of, he would have to start over, and they stay in touch with their buddies, and they hear, bad stories, all this guy he served with, he's now homeless, or, they're having trouble finding a job or trouble adjusting because there's a lot of PTSD and whatnot going around. And he was kind of, he kind of felt himself in a not good situation, but that's what he felt was the best option among his choices. And, I couldn't, it's hard to argue with him, but that should not be his choices.
No, there should be something else.
Yeah. And it was just sort of a double punch, during election night to hear, the Republicans are winning a landslide, and I can't believe that Brownback won in Kansas, because that seemed impossible. And then to have the two punch be, the soldier who's going to go back as this ISIS thing is escalating, who wants to go back because he feels it's his best option for his long-term future. And that kind of just, I couldn't call in Wednesday. I was still kind of, I couldn't talk about that calmly. It affected me, kind of just made me very, very angry and very powerless.
Yeah.
Here we go all over again. It feels like we're just entering, 2014 is just 2004 all over again. We're going back in.
I don't know, Paul. I'm looking at the next 2 years thinking that if and bear in mind, I have said all along that back in 2008, the Republican Party didn't really want the presidency, and that's why they ran John McCain. They wanted to make, they wanted to make a lot of noise. They wanted to be seen as wanting it, and they wanted to give the rubes a sticker to put on the back of their rusted out pickup trucks, but they didn't want it because the economy had not, the economy was going in the tank again, and they knew it. I remember when the Bush tax cut scheme, and remember the stupid checks that went out? Because it's your money. Everybody got $300 or something. And all the economists were saying, man, in about, in what was that, 2001? And they were saying, man, in about 8 years, this is going to come home to roost, and I mean, it's going to be hell. And sure enough, the point that was made was that George would be long gone by then. And he almost got away with it, except for it started collapsing a little sooner than people expected. So the cupboard was bare. The treasury was nothing but dust. and the Republicans didn't want the presidency in 2008. I don't know but what they may want it in 2016, and so consequently, they can't do in the Congress any of the stuff that we expect them to do, like come out and yell, you know, Social Security is communism, Medicare is communism, got to get rid of it, blah, 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 blah. So far, the Republican House has been able to do the crazy stuff that it's done because they knew that it would get stopped in the Senate. Well, now they got both houses, and they got no excuses. And they're not sure but what Barack Obama might sign some of that stuff, and then they're on the hook for it. And he's not, because he ain't running again. So you may see 2 years here, Paul, where it's just a matter of stasis. A lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. You know, a lot of freedom and a lot of liberty and a lot of capitalism and free market and you know, all those little dog Republican dog whistles, but not much coming out of it. I think there's at least a 50-50 chance that that's the next 2 years.
Well, the front page on CNN tonight is another shutdown caused by immigration, basically.
Hey, they may do that.
But see
that the drop dead date on that, Paul, is December 11th, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's still within the boundaries of the miserable can't go away soon enough 113th Congress.
Well,
and they've got, right now the Democrats in the Senate have decided to play rope-a-dope. For God's sakes, the Senate Democrats are not even interested in trying to confirm President Obama's not terribly objectionable Attorney General nominee, Loretta Lynch.
Boy, I'm trying to get as many people as you can appointed before the next Congress gets us in, because you're not getting anyone after that, or at least anyone you want.
But, you know, so, yeah, you would, I would, they ain't.
Well, I don't know, with all the holidays and whatnot, and I remember, one of the interviews on the Daily Show of a local representative saying, it's like, what did he say this year? He worked like 100-some-odd days. It's like a very short, I mean, how many days, working days do they have left with Thanksgiving and Christmas and everything? Coming in, like 5-7
maybe tops. I mean, like 4 1 week and 3 the next, somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah. So I don't know how much they can get done, and it's if you don't have a Democrat or a Republican, and you don't have a job in 2 months, you might have the equivalent of senioritis. In terms of if you got voted out, it's very hard to be motivated to get anything done of real merit.
Well, I heard something earlier today. For instance, my senator Jay Rockefeller is retiring,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't even have an office in he barely has an office in D.C. for the remainder of this this Congress. He's just got people who answer the phones, and that's it. They've cleared out.
Does, like, Shelby Moore get a move in there, or what?
She won't move right in. I don't know. Maybe she'll get his office at first, but since they're in the majority, they shuffle folks around, and, you know, the people to higher leadership positions get dibs on the really nice offices, and depending on what you want and what your style is, I mean, for instance, in D.C., and this is just totally superficial, but I think the most beautiful of the three Senate office buildings is the Russell building. And it's the one that you always see the stand-ups on TV from, because it's got its own rotunda and it's got all the beauty. And it was, you know, it was built back when America was into building big, grandiose manifestations of might and, you know, sort of new Rome-looking power. And then there's the Dirksen building, and it's... you remember the big concrete blocks... office buildings of the communist era in the Eastern Bloc, you know, of college, kind of dull and gray, and well, that's Dirksen to a certain extent. It's that era, the American response to that era of architecture. And then there's the Hart Building, and it's all 1970s modern and open and glassy and airy, and personally, I think the most loathsome of the three. But it depends on who wants what. So Shelley Moore, you know, Shelley Moore will be fairly down the pecking order in terms of seniority, but she'll get something nice simply because she's a West Virginia Republican, and they want to, just like they're not going to stick Joni Ernst in the basement.
That's fair. I guess, and then the last thing that I've been just mulling over my mind, where I think we're truly stuck as Americans, not as left, right, center, or whatever, is at the end of the day, to kind of put in an analogy, a majority of voters, if it comes down to a choice of two candidates, and one is campaigning on you've got to eat your vegetables, it's healthy for you, and the other one's campaigning on you can eat all the sugary snacks you want, it don't matter, that health stuff isn't true.
Right.
Majority of Americans are going to pick the sugary snacks because no one wants to eat their vegetables. I've been a fan of all the politicians that have campaigned on eating your vegetables metaphorically, like Dennis Kucinich and whatnot. You can tell from the difference because we have to do these things.
But there's kind of a third way there too, Paul. Because how about the argument eat your vegetables because vegetables are yummy? I pay a lot of attention to ads, and there's an ad that runs these days from one of the soup companies where children are eating their soup, and it's got lots of vegetables in it, and they call the soup company to say thank you, and the husband walks in and says, hey, they're eating vegetables, and the wife looks at him and goes, no, dummy, they're eating soup. Oh yeah, soup. And I think there are direct parallels with this analogy because you can. You can see where explaining to people that a sustainable energy economy is a better economy because it makes more money. And that's not a hard argument to make. It's not hard. One of the arguments that wasn't made during the last campaign season, and Angry referenced it, is this idea of saying, hey, there are a whole bunch of people who can go to the doctor when they're sick now. You really want to take that away from them? Don't you think they're going to be pissed with you?
Yeah. I would definitely like to see Democrats, the Democrat Party, throw some fire. And I was just waiting for anyone, and maybe I missed it, during the whole, when Ebola was getting outrageous in the terms of our response to it, not that it was a real problem on American soil, but for one ad to simply go, before this outbreak happened in America, President Obama wanted $88 million to slow the disease in Africa and to keep it in Africa. And Republicans only gave him $44 million. Vote Democrat. Stop Ebola in America. Anything like that.
Yes.
Just punch back something. You've got plenty of ammo, but it's just, run away from the president. He's the worst president in America, and I understand that. It's dog whistle for racism and whatnot. And,
it absolutely is.
And he's black, but, it's frustrating. And it just drives me crazy to watch this and go, can we get some... is there anyone in the Democratic leadership, DLCC, that just in these meetings goes, hey, the last time we did well and won something, we were using a 50-state strategy by one Howard Dean, and we had, we won back to House for the first time in 14 years, and then we stopped doing it, and we lost it again. We only had it for 4 years when we were doing that plan. We should revisit that plan. Anything. And... I don't understand the tepid response. I share your frustration with writing huge checks and to campaign people that get you nowhere. But I just, do. Arguably, I would argue that there have been progressive movements from Occupy Wall Street to what's been going on in Madison, Wisconsin, against Scott Walker in 2010, where President Obama said, I'll walk with you if you go first. There have been full steps, or at the very minimum half steps, that I would argue that the progressive movement and more liberal folks in America have taken, saying, here's your movement, here's your parade, get out front and lead it. And their response is, you're not serious still. Biggest, big anti-war protests in Iraq, the largest global anti-war protest in history, there's no leadership for it. Their main strategy for getting progressive liberal votes is, look at how scary that Republican is. Doesn't he freak you out? Vote for me. I'm not batshit. That, and then they wonder why we don't turn out. How unmotivating is that? I've got, you know, my choices are complete batshit and you know, normal guy. You know, Baskin-Robbins did not become a huge ice cream chain by offering dog shit flavor and then vanilla.
True.
You need better flavors. So, I guess that's my rant and my frustration. And I don't. And yes, I agree with you. It's just I feel like I'm just in a catch 22. You know, everyone gets a share.
But
forming a third party is invalid given the two party system. But the Democratic side of the party does not seem responsive.
Well, yeah. and that leads into something that we have to remember here. Because if we don't, a lot of the strategizing sort of goes out the window. And maybe it's, you know, I think a big part of it is tied to the fact that that Democrats ran away from a sitting president, an incumbent president, or rather a second term president. This so-called revolution, this mandate, was created entirely by people who stayed home. None of the above was the obvious choice for about 60% of the eligible voters in the United States, at least the ones that the Republicans would have allowed to vote. 60% said neither, thank you. Now, we can have a philosophical argument about whether they were right or wrong. I come down, Paul, on the argument that they were wrong because look what we got.
But even with that low turnout, you have enough people on both sides of the aisle voting for those more progressive measures, minimum wage increase,
sure,
legalized pot.
And they elected a bunch of Republicans to give it to them. Hello? this article that I saw today, and it has to do with Senator Warren being given a leadership position in the minority in the Senate, I love the paragraph that I saw. It said, in the 114th Congress, the Senate Democrats are going to pay much more attention to progressive issues. Well, of course they are. Because
they have
nothing
to lose.
Well, because it's not that they have nothing to lose. They've already lost. None of it's going to go forward. And they're going to use it as presidential campaign politics for 2016.
Yeah. I think that at the end of the day, our only option is to get bigger and louder because we just have to overcome that tide of perception.
Yeah, more militant, more radical.
Yeah, well, not more radical, just more vocal and more demanding. The Progressive Caucus might not be anymore, but with this Congress, it's still the biggest caucus in terms of numbers, with like 80-some-odd members in the House. But the other caucus in the House, but those numbers don't matter. I think that if we just have to be so loud, and I'm a fairly white guy, so I could be totally hypocritical, but I guess it's, in a sense, being like a minority. Being an African-American doctor or whatever, you have to be two times or three times or four times as good as the white doctors to be on that same par, to get that same level of respect. And maybe we have to be, because we're kind of a big block, politically and caucus, and that's just not enough. Maybe we have to be four times or five times as loud just to be taken as seriously as a normal, as a Tea Party, as a DLC Democrat, and just be loud
I take back my radical argument, Paul, to the extent that I don't think that arguing for universal single payer health care is a radical argument. I don't think arguing for reasonable regulations on runaway capitalism is a radical argument. I don't think it's I don't think it's radical to argue that we really ought not poison the next generation of human beings on this planet by the actions of 70-year-old rich, mostly white people.
Yeah, and I don't think any of the, I just like the election reflected, I don't think any real progressive stands are going people. I think people can agree with. I think that shutting down nuclear and bringing on renewable energy is something that you would get a. You could easily get a majority of people to agree. Maybe not today, but if you put out the ads and you had the arguments, you had the debates, and you put it front and center, I think that a majority of Americans would come around your way, or you get vote turnout enough people would agree with you that people who normally wouldn't vote would vote, and then you'd still get through. We have real problems, and that's why
people
drive me nuts.
What I think you just pointed to, Paul, is that we've got a communications problem. Where are, and I say this because I see all kinds of them all the time around here, the right wing does not hesitate to put up billboards along highways. I hate billboards along highways. But where are our side's billboards? I mean, if the Sierra Club, and I know I'm always picking on the Sierra Club, but, you know, they're a big green, and they got tons and tons and tons of money. Where are the Sierra Club's billboards in Appalachia? Where are the Sierra Club's, and sure, some of them would be nice to have just to sort of hold the line in places where they are naturally, they have natural affinity groups in places like Washington and Oregon and California. But where are the Sierra Club billboards in Nebraska? Where are the Sierra Club billboards in Wisconsin? Where are they in Michigan and Indiana and God knows Alabama and Mississippi?
We're right back to the 50-state strategy.
There you go. Yeah, because there's nowhere in this country that you there's nowhere in this country that you can afford to ignore.
Yeah, and you might know the numbers more than I do, but in general, in most races, governors and federal races, did the Republicans, Democrats spend about the same on their campaigns, or is it like 10 times more money for the Republicans than the Democrats?
There was a massive amount of money spent in West Virginia. There was more spent by the Republicans because they had more dark money coming in here. It got to the point where I was informed that actually people would try to buy radio ad time, and the whole run of schedule was already bought, and it wasn't bought by people that were supporting Democrats. And of course, West Virginia is a bad place to talk about Democrats versus Republicans because we don't have them. We have Colocrats and Colicans. And the only winner here in Appalachia on Tuesday was coal. Because that industry is going to poison its workers. It's going to poison innocent people. It's going to poison people outside the region. Poison, 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 poison. And they won. And before the election, they knew they were going to win because both sides were swearing their undying devotion to the industry, and after, regardless of the results, they knew they had won before the first ballot was cast.
Yeah, it is highly depressing sometimes.
Well,
but
I mean, it can be depressing, but
you got to engage on
the reality level, no matter how depressing it is, before you can come up with anything that's inspiring. And one of the things that inspires me, Paul, is that these are not problems that are absolutely without solutions.
They're nowhere near without solutions. There are plenty of solutions to fix these problems. But at the end of the day, I think that most people are in denial. I think that most people. I don't really want to pick on your age group, Bob, but I think most people that grew up in the 60s and 70s and 80s still think, so people that are in their 45 and older, 50 and older, figure out where you draw your line. You also see the demographic shift of who votes Republican, you know, and who votes more Democratic for the parties. That America that they grew up in still exists. You wouldn't believe the jaw-dropping reactions I've gotten from people, my relatives or other people, sometimes just chatting, about what life is like for me trying to make it in the 21st century financially, between student loans or whatever. Because they ask me, hey, you know, you're a scientist, you make really good money, why do you drive a crappy car? You know, why aren't you, like, you know, stepping up? It's like, because I got student loans to pay back. My student loan payment is by far, but it's $200 more than my rent a month. It's by far my biggest monthly payment. And I'm lucky to have a job that I can afford. And there are lots of others that don't. So we're struggling all this. So there's that disconnect. I think that some people are still like, hey, it's tougher a little bit, but it's still roughly the same America it was in the 70s and 80s. And we're down here in the 20s and 30s going, no, it is not. It has sucked since George W. Bush has taken office, and it has continued sucking because the problems aren't being addressed. They're just getting worse, and we're just getting hosed. One of my favorite stories to tell is the university I went to, grad school. There was a huge student uproar because at the end of 1 year, the faculty gave the students a choice. They could increase tuition by like 9% from 1 year to the next, or they could cut services and keep tuition roughly like a 2% increase. Services like daycare for single parents going to school and various others. And the students voted for the tuition increase because they did not want to cut out their fellow students from those critical services, even though not everybody used them. And they voted for it, and it passed, and they kept those services. And the next year rolled around, the university raised it 10% anyway. And they raised it 10% like we voted, but then they cut the services anyways.
Right.
And that was a huge outrage. We voted for it. We'll pay you the money to keep those services. They took the money and then just, well, we can't afford it. And we just felt jacked, and that.
You felt had.
Government. There was profanity on the campus. I mean, they were just like, there were students who were just like, you know, fuck the president, just fuck him. They were so mad. Sergi does a good job of trying to kind of give some insight of what it's like to be younger. And it gives me insight because I'm in my 30s, so I have a disconnect. From people I talk to, it's even harder for them than it was for me. Tuition keeps going up. Student loan debt is getting higher. The people that can get a job that can afford to have some semblance of life and pay back their student loan, that percentage is shrinking with each graduating year. And that's if you can find a job. And that's the disconnect at the end of the day. I'm sorry, I talked until the end of your program.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I will. I'm sorry, I was answering two questions at one time. There's nothing to apologize for. It was a great conversation. I don't get to hear from you nearly as much as I'd like to. And you have nothing to apologize for.
All right, Bob. You have to, just wrap up here to take it to you for a second. You have some insight, too, into how hard a world it is because you have daughters. You've got Ferg, who just graduated high school. You've got Doodle, who's coming up soon. I mean, you know, you've got a window into their lives and how hard it is to try to get some footing. And was it harder? Does it seem harder than it was for you when you were that age?
Oh, God Almighty! It's different. It's two different worlds, Paul. My little upbringing in Alabama was Eden compared to what my children are facing. Doodle wants to go to college really badly, and I want her to go to college, and she's going to have some sort of kick-ass grades to do it, and get somebody to offer her a scholarship.
Yep.
Yeah.
And hopefully then she'll have no debt.
Well, right. As long as she makes the grades, and
that gets your head up.
She's really smart. She's really smart, and she's working like a maniac to get herself there. My wife and I both love our children dearly, but you know the wild thing is when you watch children grow up, you go from just loving them for loving them to respecting them, and I have immense respect for all of my children.
Yeah.
Well, I got to get out of here because we are seconds away, Paul, but it's awfully good to hear from you.
It's good to talk to you, Bob. Good night, horror family.
Good night, Paul. Bye now. Paul calling from parts unknown. Thanks, everybody. We will begin the program tomorrow with a $268 fundraising goal. We came up about $118 short this evening. And, $112, so $262. If you want to help out between now and then, it is more than welcome. Thanks, everybody. Good night.